On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! As we begin another week of conversation radio broadcasting, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, the home of, yes, conversation radio. Radio unlike any other you're likely to hear anywhere else. We begin this, it's the week before the week of Thanksgiving, right? So we'll have some holiday time coming up. More than likely, I'll take Thursday and Friday, you know, Thanksgiving and the Friday after off. So we'll deal with that as it comes. But we've got a full broadcast week for you coming up this week. Just to get things started, a reminder. Tomorrow night at 7 p.m., we have another of Dr. Bill O'Brien's captivating PRISM American History Chats. We're doing, we did three in October. We'll be doing two this month and one in December, and then we will prepare the January schedule. These things are magnificent explorations of real history on an in-depth level you are unlikely to find in any, or many, if any, other places. Again, that all begins at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, tomorrow evening, Tuesday, the 15th of November, right here on The Horn. That, of course, is... you do the math for what time zone it is, what time it is in your time zone. But, you know, we ordinarily start at 6 p.m. here. We start the chats at 7 p.m. And I have no doubt but what there will be, like I said, simply amazing topicality for you tomorrow evening. And a reminder, you can get it live over the regular Horn stream, or you can view it on our Ustream channel. Just look for, the easiest thing is to just start typing American History Seminar, and by the time you get to seminar, you should see it in the search box. And you can just click on it and go, or you can watch right from the Horn's homepage, headonradionetwork.com. And as far as that goes, a little reminder about the webpage. We've still got something funny going on with... the chat room and the software that drives it. So if you please, for now, for getting into the chat room, just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, and down below the login box, you'll see in bold a link to the side door. Got to come through the side door right now. But the chat room is working just fine, as a matter of fact. I'm there. So is Catherine Canada. And so is Kinky Kim. She's been there. She got there first. So, hey, y'all. So, that I think that takes care of most of the house cleaning. Of course, you know where I was yesterday. We went down to the state capital of West Virginia, namely Charleston. And we gathered together. You know, there were a good 40, 50 of us who gathered to the side to make sure that Earl Ray Tomlin, who doesn't give a tinker's damn about the well-being of people in the state of West Virginia because he ignores the studies that point to what mountaintop removal is doing to human health, I don't believe them. That's what Earl Ray said. I don't believe them. Well, you know, every day something makes you, they say something makes you sick. So, there we were, and we were peaceful, and I mean, come on, we're nonviolent. But at the first rising of a few chants, the local constabulary, consisting of the Capitol Police and, of course, the West Virginia State Police, very stern bunch, they sort of consolidated themselves in front of us and instructed us that our free speech rights did not include chanting at an official government function. You can't chant during... You can't talk during a government of... That's illegal. There's a law against that. No, really, we were told that. Not kidding. But we managed not to get arrested. Managed to get home okay. Managed to have a lovely day on which to do that. It was very, very windy. But managed to get our point out. Several folks from our group were interviewed by local media, which was important. Because people need to understand that Earl Ray Tomlin has no respect for science. And, of course, he did his basic tugging of the forelocks and bowing and scraping. It was quite embarrassing. I don't know. It must be embarrassing to be Earl Ray Tomlin, to be somebody's creature. But and I will support the backbone of West Virginia's economy. The coal industry. So that's where I was yesterday. But today, well, today is something entirely different. Today is the beginning of a brand new broadcast week. But it's also Monday. And as it seems that every day of the week has some sort of specific theme to it lately, well, you know very well that Mondays are Moran Mondays on the horn. Yes, indeedy. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Step right up here for less than 5 cents per hour of broadcasting. You can peer behind, listen behind this thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas. You will see, you will hear things that will shock you, amaze you, disturb you. Parents are advised not to bring small children into the Moran Monday Freak Show, for it is full of Moran Monday freaks. As most Moran Monday freak shows would be expected to be. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get your program. Your program's right here. Step right up, step right up. This is the program that tells the morons you just can't tell them a lot. This is the horn. This is Moran Monday. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Head for the hills, folks, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. No, really, it is Moran Monday. And you know what? We've got a Moran nomination this week to start things out. Not the last by any stretch of the imagination. We've got a Moran nomination from somebody who really hasn't been on the lists in a while. As I noted in the show post when I emailed it off to Susan, you gotta wonder if he was saving himself. Because what a Lulu this is. I mean, the man has had a history of doing stupid, ignorant, bigoted, hateful things. But wow, this is one that's just really out in the open for everybody to see. Well, if they have eyes to see and ears to hear, of course. I'm talking about, of course, none other than the legendary Moran, a Moran among Morans. I'm talking about Bill O'Reilly, the falafel guy. Yeah, baby, come up here. I'll get you a glass of wine. I'll get in the shower with you. And I'll rub you down with some falafel. Yeah, that Bill O'Reilly. And he's out. Yes. No, not out that way. Stop it. No, he's allowed in public on any given night to spout his moranity to his television audience. But that's kind of hard to see as an overall accessible record. Imagine my surprise then when I found out that he has a book on the current New York Times bestseller list, and not just any book. It's not the usual collection of transcribed TV rants that you get from these types. No. Bill O'Reilly has gone into the history business. Really, he's gone into the history business. Which is kind of why I make it a point to encourage you and urge you, in fact, to check out Dr. Bill O'Brien's PRISM West Virginia American History Lecture Chat Series, because that's real history, as opposed to, say, this. Bill O'Reilly, and in much smaller print beneath his name, and Martin Duggard, which means that Martin Duggard did most of the heavy lifting and Bill O'Reilly did most of the sitting around screaming, "All right, we'll do it live!" Martin Duggard. Reckon that guy's got any relationship to that woman that treats her vagina like a clown car over in Arkansas? She just had her 20th baby. Maybe he's one of them. I don't know. No, Bill O'Reilly and Martin Duggard have written a book, and it is perched upon the New York Times bestseller list. It's called Killing Lincoln, because after all, Bill O'Reilly has such profound respect for Abraham Lincoln, except when he doesn't. So somebody, since this is on the New York Times bestseller list, somebody got the brilliant idea, love to sit down and have a beer with him, of selling this book, Killing Lincoln, in no less than Ford's Theater. You know, the place where Lincoln was killed. Then something bad happened. Namely, somebody actually read the book. And frankly, if it had been done in crayon, it couldn't be any worse. It is so bad, this book, as a matter of fact, that Ray Emerson, who is deputy superintendent at Ford's Theater, which falls under the jurisdiction of the National Park Service, because it's a National Historic Site, had some real problems with this book, Killing Lincoln. It might more properly be titled Killing the History of Killing Lincoln. You want to now some would say that this is nitpicking, but I don't buy that. If you can't get the basic facts right, don't proclaim to be doing history. It's kind of like writing a book about Pearl Harbor and talking about when the Germans bombed it, or when the Eskimos attacked the Alamo. I mean, that's really the kind of stuff that's in this book. There are references after references after references in this book to, and I quote, the Oval Office. Now, granted, I suppose the Oval Office has become such a part of our political argot, who knows, that we just assume it was always there. That it was the very first thing that they built when they started building the White House. There's only one problem. It wasn't. It wasn't the first thing they built when they built the White House. It wasn't the second thing they built when they built the White House. In fact, by the time that Abraham Lincoln was occupying the White House, the Oval Office didn't exist. It would not exist for another 44 years after Abraham Lincoln was murdered. So he didn't have an Oval Office in which to do business. Because the Oval Office was built in 1909. And of course, the book is written, if you read excerpts, the book is written with the sort of breathless quality of, I don't know, a History Channel documentary about aliens bringing Frisbees and wheat checks to early humans. And the aliens would never be seen again. Or were they? You know, that kind of thing. For instance, in discussing General Ulysses S. Grant and Robert E. Lee, who should have been hanged, O'Reilly, or Duggard, probably more likely Duggard, typed, not wrote. This isn't writing, this is typing. The two warriors will never meet again. That's a discussion of Appomattox, you know, the surrender. There's only one problem. The two warriors did meet again. They met for a second time later on in 1865 to discuss prisoners of war. And there's other little bits of trivia that somehow Billow and Martin Duggard get not quite right. Like alleging that Ford's Theater itself burned to the ground in 1863. There's only one problem. It burned, the fire burned in Ford's Theater in 1862. Meanwhile, it's all crickets from the fine folks over at Henry Holt, the publisher of this little comic book. It's number two, this book. Number two. No, not that way, although that way. It's number two on the New York Times bestseller list as we speak. Thousands and thousands of Americans running out and buying this and thinking it actually contains real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding, historical facts. Ellen Fitzpatrick, and I first saw this over at Salon, give credit where credit is due. Ellen Fitzpatrick is with the University of New Hampshire History Department. Ellen Fitzpatrick wrote, "Killing Lincoln also resurrects an old canard debunked long ago by serious historians that Secretary of War Edwin Stanton was involved in the plot to kill Lincoln in the hope that he might ascend to the presidency." You know, from the Secretary of War spot. Sort of a proto-George Shultz of 120 years later. There is no... I'm in charge here. There is no credible evidence to support such an assertion, nor do O'Reilly and Duggard provide any. In fact, killing Lincoln offers no... Here's the fun part. Remember me mentioning crayons? Yeah. Now, I'm reading a book as... Not as we speak, because I'm not sitting here reading and talking at the same time. But contemporaneously with the last several days, I'm reading a book in anticipation of bringing the author on to discuss it with you, called American Emperor. It is, in fact, about Aaron Burr, whom I find particularly fascinating. And honest to God, the last half inch of the book is just notes. And this book is extensively footnoted. And I am a hopeless note reader. I don't know about you, but I love endnotes because you get stuff that really didn't fit exactly within the text, but certainly gives the text more context. And I'm a reader of notes. Endnotes, footnotes, what have you. They wouldn't be there if they didn't have meaning, so go read them. Then again, I'm one of those people who stays to the very bitter end of a film to watch the credits because I figure a whole lot of people put that work in and they at least deserve to have their names read by somebody as it scrolls across the screen. Then again, I'm one of those geeks who read liner notes from music, too. Because there's a lot of work that goes into all of it. And so the author of American Emperor, David O. Stewart, I believe is his name, is downright obsessive-compulsive about providing the notes upon which he relies in reaching his conclusions. Not so Bill O'Reilly and Martin Duggard. Because as Ellen Fitzpatrick notes, Killing Lincoln offers no direct citations for any of its assertions. You know, I laughed out loud the first time I read this. You may too. In a 3-page summary under the heading Notes, see, it's getting me already. The authors assure readers that they have consulted hundreds of sources. They list the secondary sources they have relied on. That's kind of like saying, boy, did we read a lot of stuff getting ready to write this thing. Why don't you go to Wikipedia? Wikipedia can be useful. But it is not definitive, and it is certainly not a primary source. Oh, we... Notes. We read a lot of them. How many sources did you read, Bill? A lot. Hundreds of sources. Now, we dug up Mary Surratt. Right? We talked to the great granddaughter of a man who sold John Wilkes Booth some shoelaces, and there at that time heard him say that he really needed some shoelaces. Oh, we read a lot. And you see, that's one of the beauties of Dr. Bill's Prism American History Chats. Because if anything, the genius of what Dr. Bill has been doing is proving time and time again that relying on primary sources is not difficult. It's not at all difficult. The only problem is if you are Bill O'Reilly and it does not fit, and the primary sources do not fit in with your presupposed conclusions, Edwin Stanton, then they're inconvenient. Not difficult. Inconvenient. So when I first read this story in Salon, I took a little bit of heart. I thought, well, at least it's not going to be sold on the grounds of the place where Lincoln was killed. Because that's kind of like, you know, the National Park Service selling books about the earth only being 7,000 years old at the Grand Canyon and selling books with pictures of Adam and Eve riding a dinosaur to church at the bottom of the canyon. Oh, wait a minute, I think we do that. But while the Henry Holt Publishing Company still has not responded to these egregious multiple errors inside Bill O'Reilly's and Martin Duggard little comic book, somebody has gotten some pressure somewhere. Because it's still not going to be sold in the bookstore in the basement of Ford's Theater. But apparently there are there's a gift shop at Ford's Theater as well, up on the ground floor. And they're going to sell it there. After all. Paul Tetreau is director of the Ford's Theater Society. and was quoted in the press release that was issued today as saying, quote, "While we understand the National Park Service's concerns about the book, we decided to let our visitors judge the book themselves." Really, Paul? Is that what it was? You're going to let the visitors judge the book? So if I write a book that says that Abraham Lincoln was a leprechaun who was shot in the back of his little leprechaun head by an elf named John Wilkes Booth, who then leapt to the stage, broke his leg, ran outside, and got aboard a flying unicorn, and was spirited off into the night, never to be heard from again. Well, we can sell that at the gift shop of Ford's Theater as well. And what's this phrase? Yes, yes. Let our visitors judge the book themselves. Because after all, there is no objective reality anymore. Historicity is of no import. It is of no relevance. Because all we want people to do is judge books for themselves. The problem with that, however, is that if people have no working knowledge, let's say, for instance, they don't know much about the Lincoln assassination, but they happen to be in Washington, D.C., and they just happen to tour Ford's Theater because it's one of the most historic buildings in the district, and they listen to the National Park Service tour guide throughout the course of the tour, and they come to the end of it, and here is your gift shop in which you may purchase mementos and tokens of your historic visit to historic Ford's Theater. This concludes your tour for today. Thank you very kindly. And they go in, and they see the book, and it's Killing Lincoln. Well, Marveline, I think we need this here Killing Lincoln book. And look there, that patriotic American Bill O'Reilly done be the one what righted it. And he ain't never lied to us about nothing. Not about Obama being one of them Kenyan anti-colonialist Muslims who hates white people. Nor about nothing else. Especially not the war on Christmas. Marveline, go ahead. You know what? Get two copies, Marveline. Because we got to take one home to them halfway to communist youngins of ours who think that Obama, that he actually should be president of the United States. Let's show them what a real president's really like through the eyes of a great man and a historian and like Bill O'Reilly. And that happens. And in fact, once you've discounted the number, because I'm sure if you go to look at the New York Times review of books, you will find that little dagger symbol next to Billow's books, meaning that it has been purchased in bulk by the usual suspects. You know, the American Society for Constitutional Purity. Heritage Association affiliated Enterprise Institute von Mises Confederation. Crates and crates and crates and crates and crates and crates and crates of Bill O's book, which will be given away for free, and eventually I will find a copy of it sitting on the shelves of my local Dollar General for 75 cents. And there's I've filibustered on this for about a half an hour. But that's only because there is meaning to this.
That's only because these right-wing freaks are rewriting our history before our very lives. Eyes, whatever. Shoelaces. It's not like they've got, it's not that they've got a different view of the facts as they obtain. It is that they have apparently a right to an entirely separate set of facts that exist only in their minds. Meanwhile, the reviews of this goofy-ass book keep piling up. Apparently some folks have been having their way with it on Amazon.com too, which is fine by me. Edward Steers Jr., who's written a number of books on the Lincoln assassination, has penned a review of the factual or lack thereof historicity of Killing Lincoln by Bill O'Reilly
and Martin Duggard.
And he just starts off with 10 basic errors in Killing Lincoln. And again, it probably looks like nitpicking. Well, you know, that's what those pinheads like to say. They like to say that the facts have to be absolutely correct when we know that close enough is good enough. In reading the book, Mr. Steers happened to notice that Bill O'Reilly
and Martin Duggard
claim that the farm where John Wilkes Booth hid was a 500-acre farm. There's only one problem. It was a 217-acre farm. Maybe, I don't know, maybe John Wilkes Booth was hiding out on the 283 acres that were the leprechaun side. O'Reilly is, after all, Irish. And he tells us frequently. So there's that. John J. Clifford is the man who is cited as the chief carpenter of John Ford, for whom Ford's Theater is named. John J. Clifford. Which is great. I'm sure the Clifford family is proud, especially in light of the fact that the guy who was the chief carpenter was a guy named Gifford, as in Kathy Lee. And then again, there's that sort of breathless History Channel documentary kind of thing, in which the Billow and or Martin Duggard describe a man named Lewis Powell who was assigned to kill Secretary of State William Seward. Lewis Powell spoke with an Alabama drawl. It's going to be damn difficult for Lewis Powell to do, seeing how he was from Florida. Oopsie. And then there's this little chestnut that Mr. Edward Steers Jr. found. And in his review, writes the following. The authors write that she being Mary Surratt, who was railroaded and assassinated by the state in a frenzied bloodletting in the wake of the Lincoln assassination, you know, constitutional rights kind of tend to take a powder in moments of profound national crisis if there are not people who are actively guarding those constitutional safeguards, and even sometimes the guarding is not sufficient to prevent it. Witness the First World War, the Red Scare, the free speech zones, First Amendment zones of the W presidency. But Mr. Steers writes of the treatment of Mary Surratt, who had owned the boarding house in Washington, D.C., which is now a Chinese carryout restaurant, at which the original conspiracy, which was of a kidnapping, took place. The conspiracy was, it's just historically accurate to say that the conspiracy that was entered into at Mary Surratt's boarding house was not the conspiracy that wound up in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Oh, well. Mr. Steers writes, the authors, and by authors he means Bill O'Reilly
and Martin Duggard,
the authors write that she was forced to wear a padded hood when not on trial, and that she was imprisoned in a cell aboard the monitor Montauk, which was, quote, barely habitable, unquote. She suffered from, quote, claustrophobia and disfigurement caused by the hood, unquote, and was, quote, barely tended to by her captors, unquote. Sick and trapped in this filthy cell, Mary Surratt took on a haunted, bloated appearance, unquote. In a moment of historical clarity that surpasses any of the writing that happens within Mr. O'Reilly and Mr. Duggard's book, Mr. Edward Steers Jr. then comments, none of this is true. Mary Surratt was never shackled or hooded at any time. She was never imprisoned aboard the Montauk, but taken to the Carroll Annex of the old Capitol Prison before being transferred to the women's section of the federal penitentiary at the Washington Arsenal. And then he makes his closing argument, Mr. Steers. If all of the above sounds like nitpicking, consider this. If the authors made mistakes in names, places, and events, what else did they get wrong? How can the reader rely on anything that appears in Killing Lincoln? And the answer is, of course, they can't. But Bill O'Reilly is writing for an audience whose general IQ is right about the ability to comprehend the fervid, savage screaming of the audience for Jerry Beads on the Springer Show. They are used to a steady diet of historical, not revisionism, but outright lying, as propagated and promulgated by the likes of Newt Gingrich, of God knows Michelle Bachmann. I don't have to haul out the U-2 submarine again, do I? I didn't think so. Of Herman Herb Cain, Romney, Perry, Santorum, because all of them are inveterate, unrepentant, unreconstructible liars, and consequently cannot be trusted to tell you the time of day. And this is how we lose our very own history. And a damned shame it is. But that's okay. We're going to leave it to Emery and Marveline to figure it out for themselves whether or not this book is a fraud founded upon lies based upon nothing more than a heartfelt desire to fulfill a contractual obligation. Oh, and by the way, you're gonna love this. He's under contract, O'Reilly is. He's under contract in the next couple of years to write a couple of more history books. No, really. The only thing keeping Killing Lincoln out of the number one slot on the New York Times review of books is the fact that there is a biography, I would suggest probably a hagiography, of Steve Jobs, the recently deceased Steve Jobs.
Henry Holt Company, yes, announced that O'Reilly has agreed to write two more books, one of which will be a history of a not-yet-specified president. It goes without saying that there will be no history in it. I cannot wait to find out that FDR was a registered Republican. Although if it was left up to the likes of Bill O'Reilly
and Martin Deggard,
he's probably a registered communist. He might even be Kenyan. So, yeah, we got a little something to talk about on More In Monday, right? More than. And I have to tell you a little story, because I just love this. I got up this morning and saw the clip, brilliantly done by Saturday Night Live, of last Wednesday's debate in which Rick Perry had his oops moment. It was, in fact, precious beyond compare. And I was getting ready to tweet about it when I realized that what I was about to tweet about it was already in the piece. And I hollered for Agnes. Oh, Agnes, you got to see this. You got to see this. And she laughed merrily. And I said, wait till the boy gets home. I can't wait to show this to him. Because him being a sophomore in high school and stuff, they're studying some literature now. And I knew that this would speak to him. This, what is this? Well, this is this excerpt from the Rick Perry oops debate.
Governor Perry, we're still waiting for a third department.
Hey! Leave him alone! I'll tell you about the women. I'll tell you all the vivid details, and they are a lot. Just leave this poor man alone. Look at him.
I can't say stuff good. The words don't talk right.
Hey, come here. It's okay. Come here. It's all right.
I'm not going to be president, am I?
No, you're not.
Can I be your vice president?
Sure.
Where are we going after this, Mitt?
We're going to go to a nice field where you never have to say another word. It's going to be a cow and a chicken.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Are there rabbits?
Yeah, rabbits everywhere.
Tell me about the rabbits, Mitt.
You can tend the rabbits.
Okay, we turn now to...
It bounced right off.
Got it. Department of Energy.
Why was I so anxious to show that to Ferg? Well, he's just gotten done studying John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath. And for several weeks now, he's been walking around saying, tell me about the rabbits, Dad. Tell me about the rabbits. And the funny thing about this bit was that 2 minutes into it, I was thinking to myself, there's got to be a rabbits reference in here. This won't be right without a rabbits reference. And I was so proud to see it there. God, it's almost like somebody's throwing something at me. But it was there, and when I brought Ferg in to show it to him, he clicked on it right away. The minute he said, "Where are we going, Mitt?" I thought Ferg was gonna come unglued. And what a magical little moment that is, when you see that spark happening of literary recognition and comprehension and seeing how comedy works. And I'm sorry, that's just one of those little family stories I had to share with you, because I was just so darn proud of it. But it's Moore and Monday. And like I said, we have an abundance of Morans. I mean, we got lots of Morans. Not the least of whom is Mrs. Herman Cain. There's an interview airing, I guess, this evening on the Record with Greta Van Susteren on Radio Rwanda, in which Gloria Cain said, I know that's not the, in regard to the idea of, you know, Herb having a, well, what was it, who was it, was it the late Jane Mansfield who said, man is that creature with two legs and eight arms? Yeah, Gloria Cain says that's not him. Right? Yeah. That's so not her, Herbie Herman. I just love the idea that he walks in the door. Herman. I wonder if she says it the way Yvonne DiCarlo did when Herman did something stupid on the Munsters. Never happens when John Wayne does it. Maybe, maybe not. Hard to say. But no, Herb couldn't have possibly done any of that. Because she can really trust him, you know, out of her sight, right? Yeah, sure. You betcha.
On Fox News, saying her husband would have to have a split personality to do the things that were said.
To hear such graphic allegations and know that that would have been something that was totally disrespectful of her as a woman, and I know that's not the person he is. He totally respects women.
Yeah, he totally respects women. I looked especially at this last lady and the things that she said, and I'm thinking, he'd have to have split personality to do things she said. And now, of course, that he's got a lawyer out there threatening other people, trying to keep them from coming forward. I think that's a New York lawyer, or is it a D.C. lawyer? I don't know. Any New York lawyers in the audience? Any D.C. lawyers in the audience? Do you guys have a code of professional responsibility out there? Because that woman representing Herm, who said, any woman coming forward had better think twice. Isn't that witness intimidation? Especially if the conduct could be arguably criminal? Isn't that a little bit like maybe, what kind of conversation would we be having if Joe Paterno had walked out and said, any of you little buggered boys who are thinking about coming forward had better think twice? Wouldn't that be witness intimidation? Isn't that the kind of threats and intimidation considered and countenanced under the rules of professional conduct in the list of stuff that lawyers are not supposed to do? Why aren't there 150 bar complaints against this woman for her comments sitting on the desk of the Professional Responsibility Committee of either the state of New York or D.C. or wherever the hell she is? Just say it. But that's Gloria. Herm Cain's long-suffering wife, soulmate, Gloria. And this is The Horn, the head-on radio network, America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported, by the way, liberal voice. And we'll be right back.
comes around here just about midnight. She make me feel so good, love. I want to say she make me feel all right. Comes walking down my street. Watch you come to my house. She knock upon my door. And then she come to my room.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And other bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are. Quick trip to the mailbag. Marty writing in, Grapes of Wrath, Bob? You mean the cons haven't gotten that book banned, if not burned, in West Virginia? Surprisingly, no. It is, however, traditional in a lot of school systems to read Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird in ninth grade. That doesn't happen here. I asked Ferg about that, and he said, well, we're not allowed to read that. Oi. Oi. Not allowed? No. You know, because it's not really relevant anymore. Racism's over.
You know, that's something that happened down south. I mean,
right.
Sheesh. And from the Great Minds Think Alike department, a note coming in from Robert, also known as Phase 5 in the chat room, writing from Australia. Robert says, killing Lincoln sounds like last week's episode of South Park. A History Channel Thanksgiving. Were the Pilgrims aliens? Did they really do that, Robert? I want royalties if they did. Because the History Channel has not become nothing but the aliens channel and for quite some time now. And not a lot to watch there. I remember when it was the All-Hitler Network. Well, I remember when A&E was the All-Hitler Network. All-Hitler all the time. Then again, I remember when ESPN showed Australian rules football. Ah, he's a specker, that one is. Never did figure out what the hell a specker is. Now I'm sure I'll get mail from Australia explaining, and I'll be happy to have it because I'll get to explain it to Ferg. Dad, what's a specker? Oh, no. And William reaching into the Wayback Machine. Bob, I will never forget Bill O speaking about how American troops massacred SS men at Malmedy, Belgium during the Battle of the Bulge. In other words, how he got it totally backwards. And I had forgotten that, William, and I'm so glad you remembered it. Because under the circumstances, I guess we're just dadgum lucky that Bill didn't have Abraham Lincoln gunning down John Wilkes Booth in the street. Jim noting that the new book by R.K. Massey about the new bio of Catherine the Great is a much better read than Killing Lincoln. Then again, Jim, I gotta say that Spider-Man battles the 50-foot monster from planet Norblop. That's Spider-Man number 7512, issue 2, would be a much better read than Killing Lincoln. Not to say that the Spider-Man is comparable. No, I've heard about the Catherine the Great book. It's got some real scholarship behind it. I'm having a heck of a time with this Aaron Burr book. Of course, because it's got links to places that I really care about. D.C., Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, West Virginia, Nashville. I can't wait to get the author on because I want to ask him some questions about, because so much of what Burr was hoping to get going, apparently, is stuff that happened about 6 years later. But I guess Thomas Jefferson needed a boogeyman to unite the Western United States to the Atlantic Seaboard United States, and it really was not his finest moment, the sleazy attack that Thomas Jefferson mounted. And then that's not to say that Burr was some sort of lamb. He wasn't. But Jefferson's attempt to take him down was less than admirable. Just saying. But the name of the book is American Emperor, if you want to try to get your hands on it. If it's been released yet, I may be so exclusive that I've got a copy and you can't get one yet.
Yeah.
Oh, which explanation, Marty? Remember to read that explanation on the air. Inquiring minds want to know. Okay, that's going to... Okay, I'm not sure which... All right. Meanwhile, Kim writing in saying, with regard to Rick Perry, this man has some serious brain issues. Too much is something that most human beings never want to touch. It's eaten its way through his brain, corroding it, leaving only his physical appearance behind.
And of course, there was something about watching Rick Perry flounge around trying to come up with something to say last week. It was like a huge George W. Bush flashback, right down to the vocal intonations of accent. With regard to the Specker, I don't know. I mean, if I get it in, I will share it. So far, no explanation of Specker, Marty. So, where to go from here as we enter the second hour, because we got it started a little early? Well, I got an email in from Jude. And this is completely, what? Stunning. And it is via an interview in GQ magazine between, of all the people they could have gotten to interview Herb Cain, GQ got its food critic, Alan Richman, whose son is that guy who eats everything on the Travel Channel, that embarrassment to the nation. Oh, what's his name? Adam Richman. You know, Man vs. Food. The show that if I were a non-American, if I were, say, Filipino or Chinese or French or Moroccan or any other country on the planet, and I watched Adam Richman on the Travel Channel trying to eat the world's biggest jalapeno burger and not burp twice so that he could be declared the champion of world's largest jalapeno non-burping burger eating, I would hate America. I would despise this country for the simple sheer excess. Can you imagine living? Well, I don't know. Do they get satellite cable? Whatever. Can you imagine living, in say Somalia or the Sudan or hell, Greece, and watching Adam Richman eat a giant burrito and just cramming it into his face while portly, obese people behind him, swaller, 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 swaller. How could you watch something like that and not despise the nation that creates it or the viewing audience that keeps it on the air? Oh, damn, for a Moran Monday, I guess I'm a little cranky tonight. No, I got this, and it's dated today from the GQ magazine. Political interview by Alan Richman. An interview of Herb Cain. It's by David Edwards over at Raw Story. Let me just read you this. Republican presidential candidate Herb Cain says real men like an abundance of topping on their pizzas, as long as they aren't vegetables. Well, damn, where's my tutu? I just don't think a pizza's a pizza without onions and mushrooms. Maybe even banana peppers, or, when I'm feeling weird, pineapple. Oh, pineapple. Oh, that's a tutu affair. The former Godfather's Pizza CEO told GQ Magazine's Alan Richman that he likes, quote, lots of meat on his pies. I'm going to try to read this in my newscaster voice so that this will be understood as not being some sort of bit or mockery. The more toppings a man has on his pizza, I believe, the more manly he is, Cain explained, because the more manly man is not afraid of abundance. Uh-oh. Does that word, abundance, does that ring any bells for you? Does that do it? Ding, 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 ding. How many of you, just remember, this is a lot like Romper Room. I can see the hands raised out there. How many of you in the last 14 days have used the word abundance? Not counting me, because I use all kinds of weird words. Drives my kids crazy. And they, of course, have picked up the vocabulary. They take it to school, and their classmates think they're weird. Abundance. Abundance. Really. I'm willing to bet that in excess, of, and it's not because you lack a vocabulary, it's because you lack the dog whistle ability, because you're not a right-wing fundamentalist. Oh, I'll bet you didn't know. But yes, to have life and have it more abundantly. God, I forget whether it was Billy Graham or Oral Roberts or whomever used to send out a magazine or some such called Abundant Life. That's dog whistling. That's right-wing fundamentalist dog whistling. The more manly man is not afraid of abundance. Oops, sorry. Is that purely a meat question, GQ's Alan Richman asked? Quote, a manly man don't want it piled high with vegetables, Kane exclaimed. He would call that a sissy pizza. Really? Oh, Jesus, now I got to strap on the toe shoes. Thank God we're not doing video. Look like a sausage. Now, sausage, there's something a manly man will have on his pizza. The candidate later admitted that he doesn't mind a few peppers and onions. Well, there go the onions. I will never have onions on another damn pizza. I don't want nothing in common with Herb Cain. What kind of peppers? I need to know. It's a damn shame to lose the jalapenos. I can part with the banana peppers. I can't see Herb being a jalapeno kind of guy. And apparently it was a tag team, because Devin Gordon of GQ also got a couple of questions in. He wanted to know, remember, this is GQ, the mainstream for-profit media. Thank God for hard-hitting journalism from Gentleman's Quarterly. Devin Gordon wondered what flavors his Republican rivals would be if they were ice cream. What kind of a twee? If you were a twee, what kind of twee would you be? Devin Gordon apparently attended the Baba Wawa School of Journalism. Not affiliated with actual journalism. Well, Herb Cain has repeatedly said that if he were ice cream, he'd be black walnut. Really, Herb? This is not the time for me to do the shelling black walnut story about it. No. It has so many damn prurient overtones that, well, people wouldn't get through their dinner. But according to Herb Cain, Mitt Romney would be plain vanilla. You know, there's caffeine in chocolate, so he may be right. Rick Perry would be Rocky Road. Ron Paul is just not an ice cream flavor. No, he eats soccer tort or something Austrian, I'm sure. And, of course, we have to remember that Herb Cain has no respect for women, not even Republican women. Michelle Bachmann, I'm not going to say it, Cain said. I'm not going to say it. Oh, come on, Devin Gordon pressed. Tutti Frutti, I know I'm going to get in trouble. Tutti Frutti. No, you'd only be in trouble, Herb, if you said that Marcus... Oh, now I'm going to be in trouble. But, I mean, come on. If Marcus Bachmann was any further in the closet, he'd be riding a lion through Narnia. Any opportunity to use that line. I'm going to wear that line out to the point where you know when it's coming. I mean, right? Yeah. Jesus criminy. Can you believe... Honest, that's... Shall we just go ahead and make this a formal nomination? Because that's GQ Magazine earning a Moran Monday nomination. Honest to Pete. What kind of ice cream would you be? Tell me what kind of pizza you like. It's reminiscent of the time that I forget which member of the for-profit media asked the assembled Democratic candidates in 2008 whether... Okay, one question. Boxers or briefs? Or asking Dennis Kucinich, not about the fact that he was straight on correct about Iraq, correct about Afghanistan, correct about so-called free trade, correct about the health care crisis. Oh, hell no. Let's not ask him about any of that. Let's ask him if he really saw an alien. What kind of pizza do you like? Well, I only like manly pizzas. Really? Does that, Herm, does that mean that you'd sit down across from, say, Tony Bourdain and have a bull's testicle pizza? We are so screwed. Rude. David in Tennessee noting abundance. Abundance is the new conspicuous consumption. Exactly. And conspicuous consumption, masked as abundance, is pounded and hammered and beaten on hammer and tongs day in and day out in the right-wing fundamentalist dominionist religion industry. Religion, industrial complex outlets of this nation. I don't think I'm going to call them churches anymore. They're outlets. They're the big box stores of dogma and so-called faith. Marty, Rick Perry's brain issue. It's not there. It appears to be somewhere lower on his body. Help coming in from Robert on the SPECA issue. S-P-E-C-K-E-R is what I assume the spelling was. And it was a game of Australian rules football, Robert. And a receiver literally climbed the back of another guy and went up about 12 feet in the air and grabbed the Australian rules football and fell to the earth while clinging to it. And the announcers said, "Oh, he's a real SPECA, he is." English, yes. Meaning, got none. But apparently it's an Australian rules football thing. But if we get the answer, that'll just be thrilling. Jude writing in, abundance equals dominionists. Rod Parsley, Lou Engels, yada, yada, yada. You nailed it, Bob. Another clear and present danger. Another dominionist. And he is. Yeah, that's where I was going, Marty. The religious industrial complex. Fritz writing in. Herb Cain's real men pizza comment. I know even in Arkansas that there are real men that love wearing sweater dresses, leggings, boots, and eating veggies on their sissy pizza, so long as it isn't the shitty pizza sold in gas stations. Godfathers, Hunt Brothers, etc. Ring a bell. Yeah, I got the Hunt Brothers just up the road from me, and I've been wondering if they were just rebranded Godfathers in the first place. Thank you, Fritz. I appreciate it. And Michelle Bachman is, yeah, tutti frutti. I'm tutti frutti, oh, who?
I got a girl named Sue. She knows just what to do. I got a girl named Sue. She knows just what to do.
Oh, I feel a parody coming on.
To the east, she rocks to the west, but she's the girl that I love best. To the food, oh Rudy. To the food, oh Rudy. To the food, oh Rudy.
I mean, you knew I had to play it, right? The incomparable Little Richard, Tutti Frutti. How can you not? I'm surprised the emails didn't roll in. And Bob will queue up Tutti Frutti in 10, 9... You're not anticipating. Come on, get in the game, guys. Let's go to the phones before I completely lose my mind. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And, of course, email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob, happy Moron Monday.
Oh, happy Moron Monday to you, Brother Albert.
My goodness, the misogyny just Kane just can't help himself. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. I can't even. You remember back when Dan Quayle was supposed to be the dumbest bastard to ever exist? And you know.
Yeah, haven't we just gone up around a little learning curve on that?
We're through the wormhole and in another one. It's just ridiculous over here. And honestly, you know, with pizza, you know how I feel about pizza. Pizza is best when the ingredients are quality. And not in excess. You know, I must be the biggest sissy of sissies. There's nothing better to me than a correctly cooked cheese pizza. And I love vegetables on
pizza. That's the very essence of a pizza.
I mean, what is he talking about? That's because he doesn't know what real pizza is, and that's why he says, oh, yeah, nothing.
That's
like
why I work for Godfather.
Yeah. I couldn't. I think I don't even eat Sbarro's, so there's no way I'm eating. Godfather, give me a break. No. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. It's just unbelievable that this guy, it doesn't stop. And, you know, he says he's black walnut ice cream. You know what's funny about black walnut trees? Nothing grows under them. Whatever they have like this.
Like, yeah, for like, yeah, because of the tannins or something they release into the soil, you can draw like a 30-yard ring around a black walnut tree and nothing will grow.
Yeah, a little grass, you know.
But, yeah, don't plant a garden near your black walnut tree.
Yeah, it won't work. Yeah, nothing. That's the thing. And you know, it's just, the guy's ridiculous. I mean, now we have Newt. Isn't it funny? It's like they just keep reusing the same condom over and over again. And,
oh, Jesus, Albert.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's what it is. And you know, the thing's broken. It's this, it's that, it's shredded. And now it's Newt.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, it's been Michelle, it's been Perry, it's been Herb, it's been...
They're not even trying.
It's been everybody but Mitt and Huntsman and poor little Birdie... What did the skit say? Poor little Birdie-armed Ron Paul.
And the thing is, you know what's funny, you know, you know a Ron Paul bot. You know the Ron Paul bots. They're always saying, oh, Ron Paul, 2012, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, he's the best, Ron Paul, audit the Fed, blah, 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 right? It's always the same regurgitation. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, and as I say, Ron Paul, oh, I agree. Yeah, no, the guy makes good points here and there, but he's wrong on this, he's wrong on that, and doesn't believe in evolution. How are you even going to be seriously considering anyone that doesn't believe in evolution? Seriously, in 2012, you're going to support somebody who doesn't believe in evolution? There's no one else.
Well, let's take it a step further, Albert, because no offense, not correcting you, but you got the wrong word, so I guess I did.
Okay.
Believe in evolution? No. Who doesn't know evolution to be fact?
Sure. I give him too much credit. What do you want?
Yeah. I mean, that's you know, that's like our now governor until next year. Jesus, what a charade. Our now governor saying, well, I don't believe in them studies about mountaintop removal poison people. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Well, Earl Ray, we...
Just look...
tomorrow, do we get your press secretary's statement on your belief in gravity? Second law of thermodynamics?
Well, hey, if Indiana says mercury's okay, it's good enough for Indianans and everyone else in that Great Lake that they're going to dump all that mercury into. It's good enough for West Virginia. Right? Privatization, baby.
Yeah, that... Mm. Right. If it's good for the company and everybody's got a share, right?
Yeah, it's abundance.
Milo Minder Binder Enterprise, Abundant Enterprises.
It really is mind blowing, and it just doesn't stop. It just, I mean, the ridiculous. It's like a ridiculous, the world of ridiculousness. That's what this is. It's like I feel like that Harry Potter has been casting spells on us or something, because everything out of these people's mouths is even more, every day it's more ridiculous. Every day. It's right?
Albert, you want to place a little side bet?
Go ahead, let's go. What do we got? I might not bet against it.
Well, see, okay, yeah, I don't know. We'd need somebody from Free Republic or something. Because I've got a $5 bill that says it's got electrolytes, enters the debate just any day now.
No doubt. It's already there. These people can barely say, they say economy. Go fix the economy. And how many debates have they had? Like 20-something?
God, it's getting to be like truck stop eight track tapes, you know.
Did you? I mean, I saw that, and because I can't really pay attention to it because it's way too much. I mean, heck, I just got done, you know, the girls were doing school, and you know, we just had done with half of a book report, you know, and it's at this time of night, you know, and so I don't have time to always watch all this stuff and do all that. But I did catch about 5 seconds of like the Lincoln Douglas debate between Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain, and they ask him a question. He's like, oh, yeah, go ahead. I know what the answer is, Newt, but you go first. That's serious. That's your front runner.
Isn't that more like the Spanky Buckwheat debate? I mean, well, I'm going to get mail over that one, too. Oh, by the way, you've been awarded the evening's toaster. Reuse the same condom. David writing in, I shall hand make a toaster of Mayan goldsmith quality for Albert. I am 2 days ahead of prayer meeting, slayed in the spirit, signed David, Chancellor of the Celebratory Toaster.
Well, thank you. I graciously, I don't know if I'm worthy of it, but graciously.
Well, you know, you just conjured, when you use that line, you just conjured up, you know, the old definition of a Hobson's choice is the horse by the door or no horse at all.
Yeah.
And you just sent me to a sort of, I mean, because where the Republicans are concerned, it is. It's a Hobson's choice of used condoms. It's the condom in the bucket by the door or no condom at all.
Grab a warm one.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm sorry. You don't want a cold one.
Shrinkage.
Shrinkage. Oh, you don't want a dried out one. Goodness. Pain. Abrasions. Anyway, sorry.
Contusions.
I can't be helped. These people, that's where we're at. I mean, that's where we're at. We're sitting here, we have to make jokes about it because they're not serious. There's no way that these people are serious. I mean, they're just this, and you know, we've talked, how many times have we said Handmaid's Tale? That's a Dominion.
Oh, by the way, in case you didn't know, I get to haul the prophecy robe back out, Albert, you know, with the tattered moons and stars and the busted magic eight ball that says, answer hazy, ask again later. Because the newly electorated governor of Mozupistan has announced that Proposition 26 may come back in 2012. Now, was it just last week I said they're not done? They ain't quitting. They don't go away. It's coming back.
No. They're herpes. They never go away. These people, they got brain worms. They won't ever stop. This is the thing that they...
Shit, then it was terrible. They put things in our ears.
They're not... You know, and that's the thing, you know, I don't want to just sit here and scream curses. That's my normal, you know, conversion. That's how I speak. But
sometimes it's hard to avoid when it's in you and it's in the situation. We've got Robert Frost to thank for that one.
Oh, my God. It's just... They just burn the earth. It's just... It's so stupid. It's like, are you kidding me? Where do you people even come off trying to pretend that you're even remotely interested in any of this kind of stuff? It just doesn't make any sense. The crap you hear them talk about, oh, we're going to get rid of the Department of Energy. Oh, okay, great. Who's going to handle all that that nuclear waste? Who's going to handle that?
Oh, private sector.
Oh, okay. What about fusion? When are we going to get that? Because, I mean, in carbon nanotube batteries and so on and so forth and this and this and
transparent
this.
Aluminum?
Oh, yeah. Now, see, that's the other thing. You know, we keep talking, you know, I got to get off the stupid because my brain...
Well, before you go, have you seen the little poster that's going around? I emailed it to Reverbo the other day. I think I got it from our buddy Dennis in Kentucky under the subject line, embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a photograph of trains.
Yeah. Yes.
And it says, the subject line was embarrassing. And there's a picture of a sleek, streamlined, air-slick passenger train that says, Russia. And there's an even nicer-looking one pulling into a station that says, Germany. And there's another one that looks like a freaking missile. It looks like the front end of the old Concorde SST, okay? And it says Japan. And there's another one that's hurtling down the tracks and looks new and shiny and then just aerodynamically wind tunnel perfect. And it says China.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one that says France that's much the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one, and it's done up and the font, the typeface, is that old sort of Old West, you know, U.S. Postal Service... you know the typeface, right? U.S. Mail, you know, it's stenciled on the saddlebag on the Pony Express rider. You know that typeface, right?
Yes, sir.
New United States, and it's a rusty, beat-up-ass Amtrak diesel locomotive.
Yeah, with the wooden stamp font.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it is. It's disgraceful. It's disgraceful. Yeah, and this is the other thing. Real quick, you mentioned China, and I do have to bring this up because this is like a new little hot little thing in the internet, and I'm sure a few people out that are listening have seen it and heard it. You know, like Google Maps. You know, people sitting there looking at China, and they went down to up into the northern region near Mongolia, where they had this desert area, and there's some strange like paths in the ground and grids set up, and everyone, oh, it's weapons, oh, it's weapons, and everyone's, oh, it's weapons, weapons, weapons. But they never bothered. They're just looking at the one thing. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? This satellite imagery?
Yeah.
Maps about China? Yeah, okay.
Right.
Now, I don't know what it is, because, I don't know what it
well,
is.
Well, I read the story, and I immediately thought of the face of Elvis on Mars. It's Elvis.
Well, but all you got to do is go to Google Maps itself and look around, and you'll find a smaller area. You know, that's just to the northeast of one of these grid patterns, northwest, I should say. And it's a small area, but it's identical to the rest of it. And if you look real close, you zoom in, because now you can really zoom in on a lot of these things. They've really been updating it. They've been doing an excellent job. And when you zoom in, guess what you see?
Oh, no.
The first thing you're going to see is the shadows. Oh, they're shadows of windmills. And you sit there and you go, oh, that's what they're doing. They're planting these huge wind grid patterns out there. That's what because if the one thing that's already complete has the windmills on it and it looks exactly like the larger, much larger area, you know what they're doing. They're making wind farms. That's what that is. It's not a weapon. It's a weapon against maybe profits. Oh, but it's not a weapon.
Or maybe, hey, let's get ahead of the curve real quick, Albert. We're very good at it. It's a weapon against burning the planet up.
Oh, those sinister Chinese. Oh, we got to do something about this. We can't stand for this. Who's going to buy all our coal?
Well, you know, I heard it yesterday. and I will continue to defend America's most efficient and economical energy source, coal. And you know what Agnes said to me on the way home? She said, Bob, I think I'm a full-on atheist now. I said, well, honey, why is that? And she said, because that moment when he said coal was our most efficient and economical energy source, that's the moment when, if there's a God, he just, greasy spot. Goodbye.
Monty Python fist or foot.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. For real. I mean, let's just say we're evolving life forms, and one day we're our own gods and we create our own universes. In my universe, when I'm...
Oh, we're Mormons now, are we?
Well, whatever. No, don't get too crabby. I mean, I know we're getting crazy, but let's not get that crazy. But they're funny people. Like, oh, that John Huntsman. Oh, he seems so reasonable. He's a Mormon. By default, he's not reasonable. He's a Mormon.
Magic underwear.
Somebody. The guy's just the Scientologist of the 1800s. Give me a break.
Yeah,
give me a break.
Jews in the Central American jungles.
Oh, we've got the evidence, right? No, that's right, no. So real quick, so we don't lose the train thought, because I love talking about trains, you know this.
Yes.
You know, I was sitting there reading this article, and California, you know, and of course California's on top of it, but of course there's all this, you know, overspending. You know, it's the same thing, like every time they talk about solar, oh, we can't do it. Well, why not? Oh, it's too expensive. Well, how is it too expensive? Oh, well, look, they have these big centralized firms, and it's $50 billion just for the, you know, the electric lines from... It's like, yeah, because you're centralizing it. If you decentralize it, right, if you put a little anarchy into it, and you put the solar panels on everyone's house where they belong, because that's where the power is going to be produced, and you want to consume power where you produce it. You know what I mean? Nothing tastes better than the tomatoes you grow yourself, and the herbs you grow yourself, and, if, you know, whatever else. That's just the way it is. So... solar panels need to be on everyone's roof, period. That's where it needs to be. Not centralized so we keep paying, you know, because we can pay our electric bill. And what you pay on your electric bill, we'll pay off a solar system. And, real quick, the solar system that they're getting, so this is another reason why Solyndra went down. Solyndra went down is because the prices on solar panels are dropping. It's the lowest price on, what's that? It's a funny name. It's not a silicone, but it's the silicone that they use. It's siliconium or something like that. And it used to be like $122 a kilo, and now it's like $33. And that makes up a third of the price of the panels. So now it's so cheap, and they foresee it being cheap for years now. There's going to be, you know, it's not going to be this massively overexpensive thing. That's great news for us. Now we need to start buying these things. The more we buy them, the cheaper they'll get, right?
Hey, look, it's market economics.
That's what I thought. I mean, you know, and granted, I mean, it might be only 101 or 102 or what have you, but to me that makes sense. The more we buy, the cheaper they'll get. The more they'll make them, the better we'll be. The more energy independent we'll become, so on and so forth. And in 5 years, 5 to 6 years, at 2 years ago prices for these panels, you cover your entire roof with these things, and 5 years of paying what you normally pay for electricity will cover what you got. And if everyone has inverters, the inverter's an expensive... that is an expensive part of the solar package. But, you know, if your neighbor's not using it and you use a little extra and so on and so forth, then that'll fill up the gaps.
What, you mean a cooperative?
Oh, God. Did I say that out loud?
No, I think I did, but, well.
But back to these trains, you know, we sit here and we look at this, you know, like, A, you know, I love wind. Who doesn't want green energy? Of course we do. But I don't want to sit here and look at $50 billion for transmission lines. That's ridiculous. And, I want high-speed trains, you know, and they were talking about these high-speed trains in California. But they only do 100 miles an hour. They do 100 miles an hour. What is that? That's not a high-speed train. The Amtrak diesel can do that. Maybe it'll get a little bumpy, but it can do, you know, 80, 90, 100 miles an hour, right? Freight trains. Steam locomotives can do that kind of stuff. So I sit here and I look at this, and then you look at what China has, and you look at what Europe has. You know, Japan, their trains do, what is that, 300 miles an hour? There was a train I just was watching on YouTube, 613 kilometers an hour. That's like 300 miles an hour, isn't it?
Last I checked, yeah.
300, Bob. And the thing is, I love when people always like, oh, what? This is the future. You can't talk about cost. Give me a break. Give me a break. We're talking about the future. We're talking about securing a sustainable planet. What is the cost for a sustainable planet? What is that? price tag on that. Are you kidding me? Are you serious? You're worried about nickels and dimes when we're talking about sustain. It's either sustainable future or extinction. This is the thing we have.
Right. And which reminds me, you know, there was a lot of ballyhoo and a lot of hoop-de-doo recently, and I don't want to pee in anybody's Wheaties or anything, but I think it kind of has to be said. You noticed all the celebration, frankly, over Barack Obama saying that he was going to postpone any decision about the tar sands pipeline pending a full investigation and effectively pushing the decision out past the 2012 election?
Yeah, I know. It's filthy.
Am I the only guy that didn't feel like that was cause for jumping up and down and celebrating?
No. It's certainly filthy, but...
Because one of two things happens. One, he gets all of those little green people, you know, the environmentalist tree huggers,
mm-hmm.
off his ass and out from around the White House, he thinks.
Mm.
And B... he doesn't have to deal with it from the electoral standpoint, with the exception of, you know, the Bill O'Reillys and the Limbaughs of the world. My friends, he has just said, he is an enemy of our nation's energy national security needs. If he really loved America and wasn't a Muslim, my friends, he would be ordering that pipeline to be built on the chop-chop double quickie.
Mm.
Right? So, you know, he's got that to deal with. But he does. But he hopes he can bring his base back in.
Well,
and then after the 2012 election, if he has been reelected, well, then he can't run anymore, and he can okay the pipeline and screw you to everybody. Or if he gets beaten, well, you know, Willard will come in and say, well, we're going to build it now.
Mm. Oh yeah. I mean, that's why we can't let him get beaten. And if he does get it, and when he does win. Because he is going to win, but when he does win, this is when we really hold his feet to the fire. I mean, he can go the other way too. You know, he can sit there and say, "Well, you know what? Instead of screwing over his base, he could screw over these others. He could sit there and show them a better way." And I would like to think
there's only one scary thing out of that scenario, though, Albert, and that is this: there's a whole bunch of labor unions that really, really, really want them that their pipeline, and he will be hard pressed to cross them.
Yeah,
so he's hoping it just disappears.
Yeah, well, it's not going to disappear, and you know you can hope in one hand and shoot in the other, see what happens. But you know, this is the thing. You know, we're running out of. I mean, this is the thing that we always have to mention to our common people. Right, to our general population, people you could look in the eyes. You always tell them, man, now that if we're on tar sands, that's it. We're at the bottom of the barrel. You know, it doesn't matter if you believe oil is an abiotic or this, whatever. It doesn't matter. When we're on tar sands, when we're on shale, like we are in North Dakota, there's some really excellent documentaries on the Netflix regarding this situation. You know, forward these things to people. You know, tell them, who doesn't have Netflix? And if you don't have Netflix, give somebody the free month and say, hey, yeah, check out the Last Mountain. That's on the Netflix. Check out the Crew. Check out this. Check out these informative documentaries, because these are the things that will sit there and wake people up and say, wait a minute, we can't. We're at the bottom of the barrel. Where's all this light, sweet crude? It's all gone. You know, it's all gone. It's all Libya is the only one. Libya and Iraq are the only ones places in the planet that have it now, you know, in any kind of abundance. You know, Saudi Arabia has reached their peak. You know, everyone else is reaching their peak. You know, and everywhere else that this oil exists, it's either in this places like North Dakota where it's, you know, shale, or it's up in Alberta where it's tar sand. And when you start talking like that, that's it. There is no more, we dig a hole and take out buckets of oil. That doesn't happen anymore. It's gone. We've used it all. So, you know, and that's another thing. You know, what do you think? High-speed trains are going to run on gasoline? They're not going to run on, they're going to run on electrons. And we don't have to develop, you know, I was sitting there talking to somebody on Twitter about this. You know, they're always like, oh, well, the electric car, did you hear about the Chevy Volt, right? 3 weeks after, right, an accident of a side impact, it burst into flames. But that was 3 weeks. 3 weeks that thing sat there, and you know, God knows what kind of, you know, chemicals are mixing all up together and everything else, and then the thing bursts into flames. Yeah, 3 weeks. You know, nobody leaves a car sitting there 3 weeks. Nobody sits in their car for 3 weeks after an accident. Come on now. Now, so, you know, they sit there and, oh, it's how dangerous and this and that. And, you know, and I know we develop electrons with coal, but we know that there's better ways to do it. We see Germany. Now, see, this is another thing I just have to say, you know, with nuclear weapons being, you know, chewed up and taken out of, you know, ready stance, and, you know, us, you know, we have to break down that material. And what better ways to use it than, you know, maybe some, you know, power out of it? I mean, there's one way or another. What are you going to do with it? Well, you're just going to bury all this weapons-grade plutonium somewhere? I don't think so. We're going to need to use it to get rid of it. That's the only way. Let's develop electrons with it. There are safer plants than these other first-generation plants that are the problems. That's what happened. The Fukushima reactor, that's a first-generation reactor. How was that, 53, 56 that thing was built? You know, there are things that we have to do. We're going to have to be doing some uncomfortable things. And I personally would rather see, you know, a couple of Generation 4 and maybe, you know, maybe some research into Generation 5, you know, nuclear power plants. I'd rather see that than mountaintop removal. I'd rather see that than...
Oh, hell yeah.
Sands. I mean, we got the weapons. Let's turn these swords into plowshares. Let's make them useful. This is ridiculous.
Yesterday, or a day or two before, I read somewhere by some filthy coal freak that the abiotic oil argument has now made it to coal.
That's just ridiculous.
Coal forms much more quickly under the earth than we had heretofore thought. Anything to forestall the day when Appalachia, Central Appalachia, has to sober the hell up. And we will be doing it by ourselves. We will be sitting in the corner with the shakes, looking longingly over at that bottle of rubbing alcohol, if you get the metaphor. You know, that ain't good for you. It's just like David in Tennessee just said. We go fully into tar sands and fracking for natural gas. We're smoking seeds, stems, and bowl scrapings. It is that simple, folks.
Yeah, and I don't like to use the cannabis reference because cannabis isn't anywhere near as harmful. So let's make it like crack. That's when you're sitting there smoking rocks and, you know, in a piss-soaked alley.
Yeah.
That's when you're sitting there, you know what I mean? You're using your lighter. Is that a rock?
But that was the first thing. That was the first thing I thought of, too, was, you know, that guy who's desperately sitting there grinding him up some seeds, and, you know, that kind of gives me a headache, but it's something. No,
there it is. I'm going to get it.
I mean, I remember a particular T-shirt that was sold on the campus of West Virginia University. Oh, back when I rode my dinosaur to English 101, and it showed some stoners on the front of the T-shirt, and it said. No, just on the front it said, I survived the great dry spell of 1984. And on the back it showed the stoners, you know, kind of looking at each other going, dude, I suggest we shake out the carpet. it's carpet shaking.
That's a metaphor, exactly. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, we're at the end of the barrel. It's at the end of the barrel. You know, and, you know, it's just, real quick, just so we can finish on this trains thing, I have to finish it. You know, they want to spend $122 million per mile on this track. $122 million per mile of track laid. Now, Bob, France, you think France spends $122 million per mile?
I'm guessing no.
You think Japan spends $122 million per mile? You think China spends 120? None of these countries do.
Germany doesn't.
No one does. It's five times what every other country that has trains that do 300 miles an hour. 300. Just wrap your head around that. 300 miles an hour. The goddamn train is a top fuel dragster.
Yes.
It's 300 miles an hour on a train. And it's just like, okay, they're doing 300 miles.
I'd have to get on a train like that with blinkers on, because if I looked out the window, I would vomit immediately.
Oh, my. You ever seen these things? Even the maglev, it's pretty funny. They had the magnet, and they have a nice glass, you know, the maglevs. And maglevs, that's just sitting on a magnetic field. You know, and those are very expensive. And California's not putting in a maglev. They're just putting in a rail. You know, the trains do 100 miles an hour, 99 miles an hour. That's not a high-speed rail. And how is that train that's going to be 99 miles an hour? It's almost like Enron all over again to me. It's like, we'll sell California these $3,000 kilowatt hour powers. They'll pay for it because, you know, even if the old lady can't afford $1,000 per kilowatt hour, the state will come in. And that's
I remember the thing. Hey, I wiped out Granny's savings account today. How about you?
These stupid.
Oh, by the way, Kim writing in, she says, I have a Chevy Volt. I hit a phone pole about 2 months ago along my driver's side. I haven't blown up yet, and I have only bought 19.3 gallons of gasoline since August. She says, me and Ray were just waiting to get blown up.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. If the car, when the National Car Institute Safety, you know, when they do their little sled into the car with the crash test dummies, I mean, that thing's totaled. You know what I mean? And granted, it's total. It's going to hit the battery and all this other stuff. And yeah, that's great. Yeah, that kind of stuff can happen. Are you going to try to tell me a gasoline-powered car has never burst into flames? I'll tell you what.
No, because there's actually video footage of it happening. Pinto? Anybody?
And when they burst into flames, that's immediate. It's not 3 weeks later. You know what I mean? You know, so, you know, and there's the other thing. We got to spend. That's the other thing with this country. We have to, it's not even spend. Stop calling it spend. We have to invest. We have to invest in this country. If we don't build a carbon nanotube battery, now, I don't know if you checked that out, that carbon nanotubes, right? We all know that carbon nanotube, or maybe we don't all know, but I'll tell you, carbon nanotubes at the nanoscale, they're not black. They're clear. When you make carbon nanotubes, they're making these sheets out of them now. You see that at the University of Texas?
Yeah.
They're making this sheet, and they give it a little... You give it a little bit of a current, and whoop, it makes whatever's behind it invisible. It basically blends. It's crazy stuff. It's amazing stuff. And, you know, this is the things that we're listening to. You've run a light through that same material that generates all this current. You could sit there and put, you know, people put that on their windows around here, you know, the plastic coverings around the windows, your little hair dryer and do that.
Right.
To winterize your house. You could basically do the same exact thing with a friggin' carbon nanotube. I mean, this is carbon nanotubes. This is the thing. I was watching this documentary. They were talking about, what we're going to do is have some BBC, you know, about, you know, the future in terms of energy. And they're like, well, what are we going to do with all this carbon? You know, well, let's put it into the sandstone. You know, let's dig it in. You know, we were talking about this. And I'm just screaming to myself. I'm like, to me, there's one resource that we could use so much of. I mean, it's almost inexhaustible, our use for carbon nanotubes. Carbon dioxide. I mean, I don't know if there's a connection there. I mean, maybe there's a carbon connection. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we can use that. Maybe we can use this CO2 from what we're burning up right now instead of dumping it into the atmosphere. We can make some carbon nanotubes out of it. Is that a possibility? Is anyone here? Is anyone there? Does that make any sense?
Anybody? Hands in the air?
Hello?
Right, yeah.
Hello? I mean, you know, and if we're sitting there using these things, and we could sit there and, you know, buy the little kit for your house and, you know, you plug it all up and you do it all this. And this is also, now we're getting into the Tesla line. And it's wireless transmission. Now, that's another thing that they're working on with this stuff. I mean, we have, the doorway is right there. I'm looking out the window. I know everyone else is. We haven't reached, you know, we're at the door. We haven't really opened we haven't really reached for the knob and turned it and pulled it open and stepped through yet. But we can at least look out the side window and see this future that's right there. You know, and it's either that or we stay in the house and we go extinct. And that's how I look at it. You know, if we're going to sit here and try to bilk our citizens of, you know, the cost upruns of $122 million, and you know it's going to be $222 million if it's $122 million. You know, but they're going to sit there and try to bilk each other for that and try to make every last dime. Bob, I don't know what we can do. I mean, I don't know. I'm just going to – let's print up vouchers, and we can sell them to the Koch brothers and all these other guys.
That they yeah, let them get the vouchers for a change.
Yeah, let's make the vouchers so they can take their money with them. And then we'll take that money that they're going to give to us so they can take whatever else wealth with them to the afterlife. And we can, you know, fix the planet. Because we're doomed. You know, let's just sit there, we're doomed if we do nothing. That's what it is. We're doomed if we just sit on our ass and do nothing and sit there and let's just pull tar sands. Oh, we can just keep running on oil and keep running on this and keep running on that.
It's got plenty of mountains left and lots of coal under.
Oh, lots of coal, and if it's coal, it's abiotic. See, that's the other thing about the abiotic concept. You know, like, well, granted, if you think the world's 6,000 years old, then and abiotic oil is true via serpentine chemistry. If that's true, okay.
Serpentine chemistry?
I've argued with people about this till I was blue. That's what I think it is. Serpentine, serpentine, crazy chemistry maybe it's true. Maybe it is. I don't know what's going on 10 miles under the earth. I don't know. Maybe. But who knows? Maybe it's hollow, too, and there's dinosaurs down there. I don't know.
Bottom floor, fossil fuels.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue. Yeah, that's what it's dinosaur urine. But Jesus. Living in the lost world. But, you know, at the same time, we need to sit here and really think about this for a second. If the world's 6,000 years old, which we all know it's not, but let's pretend it is, and abiotic oil is true, then maybe we can just keep using oil forever, right?
Except.
Except for the atmosphere, but who cares about that?
In the oceans, in the land, yeah, in the lungs.
Who cares? Yeah, we don't need tuna. We don't need black Western African rhinos. We don't need any of that.
Yeah, goodbye.
Didn't that made me so sick?
Oh.
That's just so disgusting. That is just so disgusting. I don't even want to talk about it because I can't. I'll just scream curses. It breaks my heart. It makes me want to.
Well, you know, I had an email a few minutes ago from Ron in Raleigh. He said, I feel sorry for Brother Albert. He has repiglicking onset Tourette's syndrome. I occasionally am struck with the same disease upon listening to repiglickens for any length of time.
Yeah.
And you do. You just turn into Yosemite Sam. You know, flag staggin', blue nose, not pole, frazzled, lacking, snap, Russian.
Yeah. Oh boy. Oh man. And I don't want to sit here and, you know, I don't want to sound like Andrew Dice Clay or Joey Diaz or anybody. You know, I like you, but I don't want to sound like them when I'm talking to you on the radio. I want to convey ideas and stuff. But we hear these things. It literally just my brain, the circuit panel just. It clicks. It's like, well, that's it. You can't handle any more current than that. That's too stupid for you. That's what I do. It's either because if I don't start cursing, you know, with all the mother effins and this and that and everything else that I like, it makes me feel better. And everyone knows that cursing.
It's cleansing.
You don't hit your, that's what it is. It's a cleansing. It's like, you know, in your, I think Randy Rose, she says, you know, like she vomits in the presence of evil. Well, I vomit, you know.
In the presence of the stupid.
Exactly. It's like, oh, so, I mean, it's just, I can't help myself, but, you know.
I'm glad you weren't here yesterday.
Oh, what happened?
Oh, no, just down there at the inauguration with all those friends of coal and the head of the West Virginia Coal Association, Bill Rainey, had himself a front row seat there among the honored, meatpacking glitterati. I was so tickled with my buddy Vernon Halton, who's the executive director down at Coal River Mountain Watch. He was just walking by this guy named Chris Hamilton, who was, I mean, just find a photo of him on the West Virginia Coal Association. Chris Hamilton, find a photo on the Google. He's got this weird ass hair that just sticks up in the front like it's the mohawk he doesn't have the nerve to shave the sides off of. The front of his hair looks like something out of, you know, Beyond Blunderdome. And Vernon's walking past him. We're all, you know, and he just, hey, Chris, you're an evil man and you kill people and I hate you. And keeps walking. And poor Chris Hamilton, you know, who's been getting his ass kissed all day long, mm-hmm. is just standing there with his mouth hang open catching flies.
Mm-hmm.
What he said? Huh? You, what? But see, you would not know. Yesterday, you would not have been okay with all of that. The most economically and environmentally sound fuel source in the planet, coal. I mean, they still got the billboards up around here. I was in Beckley the other day, Albert, and I passed that billboard that said, coal, clean, green, carbon neutral.
What? You're doing it to me again. You're doing it. You're giving me the Lindsey Graham attack or the Jim DeVint attack. What is that? And what? Bob, come on now. I don't want to curse. I don't want to scream and yell. I mean,
no, but I mean, I'm not making it up. I mean, no, this isn't just Torment Albert, the Torment Albert hour.
Who buys that? Who buys that shit? Who buys that? How the hell can coal?
You want me to tell you who buys it?
I know who buys it. The jackasses with the tanning beds and everything.
Cephas and Dreema down there getting new tanning bed bulbs every year and a new four-wheeler every two and a new pick-em-up truck every five and above-the-ground swimming pool right there tucked in right underneath the mountaintop removal operation, and life is good, brother.
But that's the other thing. It's like, you know, it's sad because that shit won't fly anywhere.
I mean, yeah, no, you know what? I enjoyed so thoroughly my time visiting with you and your family there when we came out of Wisconsin. Someday you're going to have to come this way, and I'm going to have to return the favor, only not. And I'll let you hear some of this crazy shit. I mean, I will let you hear an engineer for a mountaintop removal company say things like, "Well, I consider myself to be one of the best environmentalists in America." Yeah, I know. Just get the brown paper bag out, because you're going to be on the floor in a minute.
For real. It's terrible. I guess anything could be rationalized, right? Anything. You know, you can use logic to, you know, it may not be the most correct form of using
especially
logic.
If you're getting $110,000 worth of rationalizing grease every year.
Exactly. And that's what does it right there. That's exactly what does it. And it's like, God, I want a time machine. I just want a time machine. Wouldn't that time machine just be a beautiful thing? You know, you could just sit there and grab Bill Rainey by his little freaking Weasley nose, hook his nose, and get your ass in this machine. You know, and just, come here. This is what you're doing. You know,
pocket it.
I mean, look, this is the world. Now we'll go, and we'll be, and you know it's going to be true. It's going to be Blade Runner, right? Sky darkened with soot. Fire coming off these towers because they're fracking the very last bit of methane out of the rock matrix. It's just like, this is what you want. This is what you want. You want to do Easter Island. Don't you people know anything? Don't you understand anything? How many trees does Rapa Nui, Easter Island, have on it? None. Zero. Nothing. Because they cut them all down. Because they were making their stupid monuments, their big phallic man symbols, to what? To the point to that they had nothing left.
And you know what? I bet them Rapa Nui and gods, I bet they liked their pizza with a lot of rat on it, because they didn't want them none of them sissy pizzas with the vegetables.
We like long pig on our pizza.
Yo.
And that's what happened. They started eating each other.
Yeah.
By the time that where Captain Cook found the place, or whatever his name was, that found it, right? They had Kuru. They were all freaking crazy. There was only a couple of thousand of them left. And if they didn't find them at that remote corner of the world, they wouldn't, and we found them just, in 2012, there'd probably be none left. They'd all be gone. It'd just be a bunch of bones. And that's the thing. It's like, don't you understand? Have you ever seen Cosmos? God damn it. What's wrong with you? We're on a planet that's spinning through space, and there's no other planets that we can go to. No, go mine coal on Mars, then. I mean, you don't shit where you eat. I don't know how many analogies can you come up with. What is wrong?
And you know what, Albert? I would give good money if I had it. This is the kind of talk that deniers and idiots and the stupid need to hear, because we're so nice to them. We're so sweet and, well, the science is there, and I don't understand why these people deny it. It's time for that to end. It's time to start saying what you just said. Get in the time machine. Come here.
Yeah.
You want this? Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or, maybe move Bill Rainey and Chris Hamilton and his weird-ass hair out to that island. What is it, the Maldives?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's now, like, what, an inch above sea level?
Yep. Yeah, when the high tide comes in, they have to...
Yeah, Chris, buddy, we're going to build you a lovely house here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give you all the coal-fired electricity you want.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have any wind, and you can't have any solar.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, you're going to realize real quick there's a connection between that coal-fired electricity and the fact that you can't keep your feet dry. And after a little while, we're going to ask you one question, Chris. How long can you tread water?
Yeah, that's the thing. What are you going to do with your $100,000 a year? Are you going to eat it? Are you going to float around? How long do you think that's going to keep you buoyant? You know, I mean, It's just unbelievable to me. It's just unbelievable to me. If we don't, this is like, I don't even like saying it because I know everyone on the horn knows this stuff, but that's why it's like preaching to the choir. We all know if we don't take care of the planet, it's not for, you know, it's for us. It's for us to sustain ourselves so we have great, 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 great grandchildren. So my children and your children, we have lineages. And they can sit there and look back. I mean, this is the time. I mean, if this is not the time, when is the time? If this isn't the time for people to sit here and come together and say, wait a minute, we're going the wrong direction. This is not the right way to go. This is the wrong way. You're lost. And if you don't want to pull over, that's fine. Just slide over, and I'll slide over you, and I'll get in the driver's seat. You can come for the ride. There's nobody saying you can't come. Who's saying they can't come? Who? You just can't drive anymore. That's the problem. You just can't drive. I don't want to hear no shit about no dollars and cents. Dollars and cents when we're extinct, what does that mean? What does that mean? It means nothing. And, you know, like, you sit there, you think, you know, even the simplest of animals, like dinosaurs, and, you know, simpler than us, you think, you know, even they went extinct.
They had a longer run than we've had.
And that's the thing. Exactly. You're going to let some stupid dinosaur... When?
No, see, that's when? I mean, that's like what happened with me last week, you know, coming back from the trip down to Kentucky. Where I was, Albert, it couldn't have been any more ruins had I been in the jungles of Guatemala. The arid streets of Egypt, or atop the Acropolis. I was standing in the ruins of a failed civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this notion that, well, I mean, it's with the Mayans. It's like, you know, one day they're there and the next day everybody's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't how it was, and it isn't how it is.
Mm-hmm.
You had a town of a couple or 3, 5, 10,000 people, and then the coal played out, and... And they left their buildings, and they left their hopes and their dreams and signs of occupation, and now there's 500 people left clinging to that little bit of a town there and trying to preserve the artifacts of a formerly great age. It's like the Mayans. You know, the Mayans deforested their entire region. Why? And this is just beautiful. I mean, it's so applicable now. The Mayans deforested their region, yes, to a certain extent to have wood to make stuff out of, but for the most part, they deforested their region to burn the trees so they could burn the limestone to make the lime to paint their pyramids white.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing. And, yep. You know, and after the civilization had so-called fallen, there were still 400 or 500 people who were still trying to find one last goddamn tree to chop down.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could burn up some lime, you know, and put a fresh coat on the pyramid to keep the god happy.
Yeah, it's futility. It's just...
You want some rat with that?
Yeah, it's insanity. It's insanity. You know, it just doesn't, it makes no sense. It's backwards. It's like Ron Paul talking, we got to go back to the 1900s.
I want everybody to buy their gasoline with a silver dime.
And that's, it's just...
That one photograph of him last week, you know, there was a reference in the Saturday Night Live skit to his little birdie arms, but there was this one picture of him holding up 5 creaky old fingers that won't even straighten out, sort of pointing them over toward Rick Perry. And Jesus, he in that, I just looked at it and went, oh my God, he's Emperor Palpatine. It looked like he was getting ready to send the lightning rays into Rick Perry's brain, or what is there instead of a brain. And he's, you know, because it was all about hanging on to entrenched power and oh, mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yeah, keeping the status quo. And the thing is we, at the speed we're traveling now as a civilization, there's no way we can hit reverse. We can't go in reverse.
Oh, Jesus, there's you no try way. To hit reverse, the whole fucking transmission's going to... Did I?
Yeah.
See, no, it's a real disease, Albert. The transmission's just going to land on the road.
Yeah, you can just hear pop, and then that's it. And that's it. I mean, then you know how it is.
Ron Paul, why aren't we moving forward anymore? I don't know. We'll call the Von Mises Institute.
Well, the Austrian economists. And that's the other thing. I mean, you know, actually, what's his name? Paul Krugman. He's been writing some really...
Paul Krugman's been on fire.
Holy cow. Holy cow. And real quick, just before we forget, did these pig-licking scumbags really, really talk about how they love torture? I saw the headline, and I just can't read it.
Yeah, they did. I got it here. I listened to the audio once and was like, well, I'll just be vomiting all night now.
Yeah. Really? It's like, are they trying to just batshit crazy each other more? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's a batshit crazy auction, Albert.
Yeah, it's like, I'm so crazy, we need to torture everyone, and, I'm so crazy, we need to, kill the environment.
Bomb Iran, that's what we need to do, definitely bomb Iran.
And that's the thing, even McCain comes out, McCain, who sold all this shit down the road, you know he did, back when he hugged George Bush after what George Bush did to him and said about him, back when we thought that he was a man of integrity and we could respect him. Remember that? When he was a sane Republican.
So we thought.
And then he went, of course, and then 2000, and the power, the avarice, the pull of it, just frazzled his ass. But even he comes out and he's like, no, waterboarding is torture. Now, I can't remember. Maybe I'm just imagining this, but I kind of remember like McCain poo-pooing waterboarding. Oh, that's not torture.
Right.
Yeah.
When he was selling his stuff down the road. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he said something about that. But then again, now he's out of the vapors. Maybe he's got a coherent thought. And even he comes out and says, you people are crazy. Every single one of them. Every single one of them. There's no way. We can't.
Well, did you happen to notice? I didn't get to the story and give it the justice it deserved. It was about 3 weeks ago, Albert, when Rick the Bro-Fro-Mix Santorum said, you know what we need to be doing? We need to be offing some Iranian scientists. We need to tell them if you're going to work for that Iranian nuclear program, we're going to kill you. And it sort of laid around there for 3 weeks. But then, in the last day or so, look, he's up there in second place. So suddenly, Newt wants to kill him some Iranian scientists. Does it not occur to these clowns that maybe some of these scientists are doing this because there's a guy from the Revolutionary Guards back at the old homestead with a pistol against his little boy's head?
And does it ever, why would they want a nuclear weapon? I don't know. Maybe because they're constantly being threatened by friggin' invasion and complete...
Well, am I just a lunatic here? If you want to de-escalate the arms race in the Middle East, wouldn't your energies be far more productively placed in trying to create a lasting peace? I know, I'm going to get... A lasting peace between the Pakistanis and the Indians? Because, boom, there's two nuclear arsenals that no longer are available for use on Iran. So Iran's crazy paranoia goes down a little bit. And then all you've got left to deal with is the Israelis.
And
the one sane thing that I have heard out of this Republican pack so far is that, and it makes me feel like I need to go to the doctor and pee in a jar or something to make sure that I'm not bad sick, is when, was it Perry who said we need to zero out funding for Israel?
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
And then quickly backed up and said, well, that's not to say it's going to stay at zero. What they're going to do is they're going to have to come and they're going to have to make their case to us.
It always makes me laugh when Israel is an entirely new can of worms. But they always these are the people who got us into catastrophically high debt, deep debt, we should say, not high, deep debt. They took the surplus that we were supposed to have paid off by now, right? Bill Clinton,
right, yes,
balancing the budget. That would have been, we would have been done. We would have had a $2 trillion surplus. $2 trillion we could have freaking, we could have goddamn freaking.
Yeah, that's where your maglev trains come in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. And these are the, these people are assholes. These assholes sit there and they squander everything on these friggin' wars of aggression. They go and do this, they do this, and they tax cuts for everybody. Even tax cuts to the point where Tom Coburn, right? That's that jerk off's name. That guy's even saying, what the hell are we doing giving these people $2 trillion? What are we doing giving these people? They don't need $2 trillion.
How many Republicans the other day looked at Grover Norquist and said, take my name off your pledge?
There we go. And that's about time. That's
did you catch the punchline, though? Grover Norquist said, oh, hell no, I won't. Once you've signed it forever, baby.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I would love to see some Republicans come to their senses and realize that Grover Norquist, as much money and backing as he's got from all these little corporate, these corporate thugs and gangsters that are out there, they can't primary all of them. They can't. There's too many of them. And if these Republicans would do what's right, did Coburn have a lucid moment? Did he? I mean, I'm going to give him credit that he did.
Yeah.
I think he did. So I'm going to give him credit because we want to encourage that behavior. You know, when your dog comes to you and sniffs and says, and you say, you got to go outside, and you put him outside and he does, good boy. You don't bring him in the house and beat the hell out of him. So I'm going to give Tom Coburn, good, attaboy. Good job, about time. Maybe the rest of them will be encouraged to say, oh, we can come out of this shell and I know that they're all a little nervous about, all the debauchery that are that is being exposed nowadays with Penn State and all the other things. And we all know who the real perverts are in the friggin' Washington. You know, it's like they always try to talk about this some sort of, well, Democrats do it too. And we all know. You know and I know and everyone else knows, yeah, they're of course. Avarice is a cancer. And cancer doesn't care if you're white, black, Republican, Democratic, whatever. Look at Herman Cain. You trying to tell me that's not a greedy, disgusting... Of course he is.
Walking cancer?
Yeah, he's a cancer. All these people, he doesn't even eat vegetables. You dummy, you're going to get colon cancer. See you later. But anyway, this is the world we're living in, and we're sitting here thinking about these people, and they just want to, Bob.
I know.
Bob, it's
it's got electrolytes.
It's got electrolytes, and, brought to you by Carl's Jr., and that's the other thing, I actually think the show's actually going to be funny, but it makes me laugh, we're sitting here looking at a whole new fear factor. The fear factor's coming back. And a whole new, ow, my balls. Eh? That's how I look at it. Oh,
yeah.
Ow, my balls. More distractions, all this other stuff. But, Tom Coburn's even waking up. These people are waking up. We got to sit here and at least encourage them and hope that these other guys find a little tiny bone of courage and reason. And sit there.
But now they're, I don't know if you noticed this or not, Albert, but now they are the congressional creatures, the super Congress. They're trying to pull together a weasel job.
Of course.
They're trying to pull together a package that will say, yes, there's going to be tax cuts, but we will leave that to the incoming Congress to sort out.
Yeah, well, we all know who we need to get in there. And you know what? You and I, in the economic sector that you and I exist in, can we have tax cuts? Sure. Could we have tax increases? Maybe a little bit. But we all know who needs to pay taxes. We all know this. We all know. It's the people that can't spend. They can't spend. They don't even have enough life left in them, in their corpses, in these dried out husks, to spend a fraction of what they have accumulated. So we all know who has to pay these taxes. And they should put a tax on these Wall Street, Wall Street transactions. What is that? 0.5%? What even? 2%? 0.2%? Whatever the hell it is. We need to tax them. That's who we need to tax. Doesn't that make sense to you? I don't know. It makes sense to me. Who needs to tax cut more? You or Warren Buffett? I know who needs it more.
Warren Buffett knows who needs it more. Exactly. But the fact of the matter is, all of this business about not letting the Bush tax cuts expire for the working class or the middle class or what, that's all blue smoke and mirrors. The only way to do this is to let the whole damn thing expire. Because as long as we're talking about who deserves it and who doesn't deserve it, Let the whole damn thing expire, and then if you really care about the working class, do right by them. Otherwise, let the working class go to the polls in November and throw your ass out.
Exactly. And I think they are. And I'd like to think they are. I'd like to hope they are. And I'd like to think that, you know, we're not as stupid. You know, when it all comes down to, you know, when all we have to eat, once again, here we go and talk about this, when all we have to eat, because we have no choice, is hot dogs, you know, I'd like to think that some people might want a little chicken, and they might want a little of this, and they might want a little of that, and they're going to sit there and say, you know what, this is ridiculous. You know, we can't keep doing this. What jobs? Who the hell's creating jobs? Where's all these job creators? Where are they?
No, all the data's out there now. I think it was former Michigan Governor Granholm who said, we gave him incentives and gave him incentives and gave him incentives and nothing happened.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Because they banked it. They banked it.
Yeah, they're worldwide. They don't give a shit about us. They don't care. Because they can afford to go anywhere they want. They can afford a 300-foot boat and the gas in it is what they found in the couch cushions. And I've told you this story before. You know, my in-laws, he was making, you know, all these very expensive boats and so on and so forth. Bob, they've got, you know, 3,000-gallon tanks on these things. 3,000 times 4.
Yeah.
That's what it costs to fill the goddamn tank? And if you can afford that, I don't know about that's 20 grand. What are you, crazy? These are people like, oh, I can buy a boat and I can fill it.
That's pocket change.
It's pocket change. See, these people don't even exist in the same world we live in. You know, when, you know, the little Olsen twins, you know, they have all the, you know, they're billionaires, those little girls, or they're women now. You know, they can afford a $20,000 handbag, because $20,000 handbag to them is like $20 to you and I. In fact, it's probably less. It's probably like 25 cents to us, you know, is what $20,000 is to these people. So the discrepancy is ridiculous. You know, it's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. And I can't believe that anybody is going to sit here and try to pretend it's fair. You know, the same people that sit there and got us in all this goddamn debt are the same assholes that now they want to invade another country. And a country that's three times the size of Iraq. And that they haven't had all the same. They want to go and invade Iran? What? What are you talking about? Whoa, stop with this stupid old paradigm bullshit. This is the thing that just drives me nuts. We don't have enough coal. We don't have enough gas. We don't have enough. And we don't have enough money or credit to sit here and do this stupid crap. This isn't the friggin' 19th century, the 18th century, the 17th century. We're supposed to be in the 21st century. We're lucky to even be in the 20th. Right? We're supposed to be in the 21st. That's where we're at now, apparently. Where the hell's my flying car? Where's my bag left train? Where's my, you know, replicator? I need a replicator. I need a food replicator. Why don't we have a food replicator? Oh, because you guys keep wanting to blow all your money up on firecrackers. I'm tired of it. I'm sick of it. Everyone, who isn't sick of it? That's why Occupy Wall Street. Look at this. This isn't the Tea Party.
You know, it's so funny. It's so funny you mentioned firecrackers, Albert, because I remember back and, you know, coming back and forth from Alabama to West Virginia all during my youth, you would get out of Kentucky on I-65 or back even, you know, when it was U.S. 31 or whatever, and you would pass through this segment of Tennessee that was basically Goodlettsville, and I can't remember the other little town, and it was nothing but fireworks stands. My father hated passing through them in the night because the neon lights were just blinding. Loco Joe's, Crazy Charlie's, Black Cat, you know. And every now and then I would say, you know, Dad, I sure would like to, I'd like to buy some fireworks. I'd like to have some bottle rockets.
Yeah, they're fun.
And my father, raised in the Depression, would infuriate me. Because I just wanted to see things go bang and make a flash in the night, and, you know, it was fun. And he'd say, well, we can do that. We can stop here and spend $20, $30 on fireworks. But he'd say, I need an answer from you before we do. And it got to where it was just a damn script, Albert. How many of them firecrackers can you eat? How many of them firecrackers going to keep you warm at night? How many firecrackers can you put on your feet to make sure that you don't cut your foot when you walk to school?
Mm-hmm.
At which point I understood that we would not be stopping at Goodlettsville. But that's exactly it. How many people can you feed on an ICBM?
Exactly. Exactly.
How many roofs can you put over how many heads with the carpet bombing of Afghanistan, where even Donald Rumsfeld himself said, well, there's no fun bombing that place. There's nothing there to bomb.
Yeah, there's no good targets. There's no good targets. Iraq is where all the targets are.
Target rich.
Rich. Son of, yeah.
Lots of stuff to break and blow up there.
Dirty, filthy, freaking Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah, I know. That's another one of those lightning bolt moments, you know.
Oh, man. He's the third stage in Gonzo's attack. It's Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld. I say Rumsfeld. He goes crazy on his toys. He goes all crazy. And that's the thing. You know, it's like they build shit to vaporize things, and then they cry when the money's all vaporized. Like, where did it all go? They're cokeheads. That's what they are. These people, these Republicans are cokeheads. Oh, yeah, let's get military, military, military. Oh, proud men and women. And then they, of course, who doesn't, you see? How long have we been talking, Bob? We've been talking since... Right before Iraq, right in that Iraq, we get into Iraq, right? We send all these guys there, and where did they send them in? Right? Body armor.
No body armor.
None of this.
Plastic-bottomed Hummers.
Yes.
And now that they're home, Mitt Romney has had a brilliant idea, Albert.
Oh, what is his idea?
I mean, Willard.
Willard.
I know. Willard wants to give veterans vouchers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So that they won't have to be participating in that highly efficient VA medical system. You know, some vouchers so they can buy for-profit insurance to take care of the stuff that the for-profit insurance company won't take care of. Oh, we've got your money. Yeah, oh, we got the voucher. Oh, no, that's a pre-existing condition. No, yeah. You're not covered. No, but we got, yes, absolutely. We got the money.
Yeah.
But you're not covered.
Yeah, traumatic brain injury. Where'd you get that? You had that before you got in the military. There's no doubt about it. And then, of course, Jim DeMint, right? He doesn't want to treat anyone special. Oh, we can't treat anyone special. Right? The same line, ain't it?
Yeah, just me.
God.
It's getting colder up there, so, you know, you've got to be laying in the brandy stock, Albert.
I wish I had it. I mean, it's like I'd be mainlining it right now because you just have to do it. You have to relax. You were pig. I mean, you know, they make you drink. They make you do drugs because you go, there's no way that this is real. This is not real. And that's the thing. That's the thing that makes me, at the end of the day, are they conscious? Like, did you know the term? This is a funny thing. The term zombie is an actual psychological term. And it's like you can't recognize whether a zombie has consciousness, because a zombie is all there, right? Except they're not consciousness. They're just, you know, they're just inact. They're like a robot, essentially. So that's what these people are. I mean, I've never heard anything to make it even more clear than that. They're freaking people with zombies. How stupid and inhumane and selfish and greedy can you be in one lifetime? I mean, these people better hope there is no reincarnation or anything like that, because they're doomed. They better hope that when you die, that's...
Yeah, I was thinking about the other day. With the brothers Shashi and Ravi Ruia, who are over here blowing up the mountains across the river from me. These guys are into a faith system that says that they're going to pay, and big time, you know, for every rotten thing they do.
Mm-hmm.
What is one mountaintop removal job equal to in karmic economics?
I mean,
dude, you're coming back as a banana slug.
But banana slugs have more integrity and honor. They're going to be come back as like I don't even want to talk about it. Even parasites are better than these people.
Dung beetle.
They're going to come back, or just space dust, conscious space dust. That's got to continually, forever orbit some sort of binary star system, and you know, attributed to all the kinds of radiation, just fried all the time. And all
bounce into the black hole, pop into another universe, bounce into another. The stuff that the Greeks were talking about. I mean, is there? It was Sisyphus that had to push the rock, right?
I think so.
Because Prometheus was strapped to it.
Yeah.
Sisyphus had to push the rock. Is there a better Sisyphean manifestation on the planet than the dung beetle? Just rolling his little ball of shit all over the planet for the rest of his days?
That's them. That's them. And that's what they eat, and that's what they do. And it's a useful thing, but at least now these people are useful. At least now it's a useful, you know, niche that they've carved out in life. And that's a beautiful thing, and I'd love to see them as that, because now they're useful. Other than being, you know, parasitic vampires and cannibals, because that's what they are now. Now they're cannibals. These people are, that's what they are. What else do you call it? I don't know what else you call it when you sit there and squander the richest nation that's ever existed in the history of mankind, and you blow all of its money on military nonsense and this and that, and stuff that doesn't ever last more than 10, 15, 20 years. You know, just nonsense. Just blowing.
Yeah, see, you may have sent David in Tennessee off, you know, my head writer. You may have sent him off to the wet bar a little bit ago. Because, you know, when you're raised in a country, and I don't know what it was like where you were growing up, and I mean, you know, New York, right?
Long Island, yeah.
Yeah, and they teach you the patriotic stuff when you're a little kid. Were you still getting that when you were a kid?
Yeah.
And the stand, sure. And the pledge, and the greatest nation on earth, and the heroic sacrifice of those who've gone before us and carved the great nation out of the wilderness, and blah, 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 all of that, and you believe it. You believe it, and you buy into it, and you invest in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I go in the military, where it teaches me that the chain is only as strong as its weakest link.
Yeah. So a little bit ago, I get this email from David, and he says, "Oh, I hate this thought. USA equals Easter Island plus Blade Runner." Because when you've got that, there's something. There really is. There's something transformative about an equals sign, Albert. And when on the one side it's USA and the heroes who went before us and the blood spilled and the nation carved out of a wilderness and the melting pot and freedom for all and all of the stuff that you get taught, and then you hang the equal sign on it and then you put Easter Island and Blade Runner. I mean, that is a massive betrayal, Albert.
Oh, it's
And it's a betrayal by the same people who have been hooting and hollering and waving that bloody shirt and talking about that nation carved out of the wilderness and the sacrifice of others.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the same sons of bitches that are turning it into Easter Island plus Blade Runner.
Yes, and it's their fault. This is,
you know, it's Don Blankenship showing up at a damn Labor Day rally on top of a mountaintop removal site wearing a shirt made out of an American flag. Yeah, my father, if he had been physically able, would, if he had ever gotten the chance to get around Don Blankenship, would have beaten him within an inch of his life for that little bit of disrespect to the flag.
It is. It's a grotesque and hideous shirt. That is hideous when I see people, and you know that the people that do that, those are the Sunshine Patriots. That's a Sunshine Patriot right there. That you're going to take the flag, right, that's supposed to mean something, and create a garment out of it. You know, it's just unbelievable to me. You know, I sit there and I always laugh. You know, I don't happen to fly an American flag in front of my house. I don't have a flagpole. And if I did, the flag would mostly be upside down because, you know, I have
distress.
What that symbolism means. It's duress, exactly. But I look at my neighbors, and, man, they run their flag all the time, and it doesn't matter if it's raining. It doesn't matter whatever it is. It doesn't matter if the flag is wrapped around the pole. And that bothers me. Because I'm a patriot to the point of, you know, to a certain point. Because, I mean, in all reality, you know, I'm not that patriotic because I think it's kind of silly. I mean, in terms of not the idea, but I just think it's silly to go, oh, I'm so patriotic. I love
that. No, no,
country.
No. Aspect of it, you know, where patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels. Right.
Amen.
But yeah,
my parents made it here. And yeah. I was born 9 months later, you know. So, but I like the idea. I want to see the idea. I'm proud of the idea. And if you don't think that the idea of America is a progressive place, then you're in the wrong. I think you're in the wrong universe. Because how can you see it in any other way? You know, I don't understand. Like it's the same. Well, this is a fundamental argument between liberals, right, and conservatives. Where, you know, they think that the, you know, just like they think the Bible's the word of the...
No, but they really are in the wrong universe, Albert, because we know now. You know, we don't think it, we don't suspect it. We freaking know it. That because I've been watching Nova every night for the last two Wednesdays. We know that there was, I mean, this is down like on a crawling around in the mud science level. We know that, you know, they used to think that the universe was kind of like a breathing thing, that it contracts, it expands, it contracts, it expands. And then some people thought that the universe was contracting, just contracting, and, you know, big bang out, big bang in, right? But now we know that the Big Bang is the creator of a universe that is forever expanding, and that, to wit, forever progressing. Now, what it's progressing toward, we'll leave that to the Nova guys.
But
if your worldview says that we need to regress, that we need to crawl back into some time in our imagination where Mary Surratt was kept in a hood on a monitor vessel in the Washington Navy Yard, and you can just make up our history as you go along, you are literally working at odds with the universe itself, Albert.
Yeah. You're violating the fundamental laws of nature. You're not evolving. That's the whole point. It's evolution. That's what evolution is, isn't it? That's part of, I mean, you know, like, yes, life evolves, but so do star systems. So do everything evolves.
Churches evolve.
There you go.
Everything evolves. That was the first day of Anthropology 101. If I don't get anything across to you, everything evolves. And then this long laundry list. Everything evolves. And if you say anything else on the final, I will fail you.
That's how it is. Period. I mean, that's how it is. That's just the way it is.
You know, I don't know. It's like some sort of military documentary about not getting the clap. You know, your universe and you. It's evolving.
It is.
Jesus, I know.
That's why you're supposed to check yourself for tumors, right? Men are supposed to check the testicles, and women are supposed to check their breasts, and, you know, because tumors evolve. You know, they get bigger, and they're supposed to notice them. You know, and if you notice a lump, you don't go, oh, forget it. I'll forget that lump. It's not there.
Oh, and by the way, Ferg just wandered back in here and heard me say your name, and he started waving madly. Hey, Albert! Hey, Albert! Hey!
Oh, Ferg.
And the snozzleberries will taste like snozzleberries.
Oh,
yeah, he's got a little project in biology right now. He has to come up with a sort of invented antiviral agent. And the teacher told me today that the minute that she announced the assignment, that the vast majority of the room yelled zombies. And so in the course of this conversation, I've just written down a little, because Ferg chose to create the artificial, the imaginary drug that cures it. So the name of, it's a collaborative process, of course, the name of Ferg's anti-zombie drug is Zombie Gone. Don't you like that?
I like it.
Oh, and by the way, just to check in from Australia, Robert just wrote in and says, no one in Australia flies a flag out in front of their house. We've always wondered why it seems to be such a big thing in the States. And then there's the story of the Australian woman who married an American and moved to a gated community in the U.S. where she wasn't allowed to fly an Australian flag. U.S. flags only, apparently. Out here, we call that being unfriendly.
Yeah, and it is. It's this phony, I'm better than you because I'm more patriotic than you kind of...
Can I tell you a little secret just because I want to trigger your Tourette's again?
Oh, God. I'm sitting.
In addition to the friends of coal signs in the front of people's yards, there are people, I guess it's gone, I guess maybe it's gone now because they were bought out by Alpha, but there were people who flew, I have seen them, the Massey flag in their front yard.
Say that. Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
You know, the big black M with the sort of Mount Doom flames spouting out of it.
It's something out of a cartoon.
I know.
An adult cartoon. One of those
disturbing Japanese things that runs on Adult Swim at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, with tentacles and just evil. Yeah.
But you know what? There is something to be said
And that is this. We were getting out of the car. You know, it's getting darker earlier now. And I guess it was over the weekend, and it was overcast maybe on Saturday or something. We got out of the car, and maybe I can credit this as a success of his mother and I, but whenever we get out at night, the first thing Ferg does is look up at the sky.
Awesome.
And I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks up and goes, and, you know, he had one of those moments and used one of the words he's not supposed to use. Holy shit, Dad, look. And I looked up and he said, the flying spaghetti monster is in the sky. And Albert, he called his mother. His mother saw it. I saw it. The two big meatball eyes, the little pasta-like, you know, and the little the noodly appendages hanging down. It was all a function of a full moon being covered up by cloud cover. And light and shit, but it was there, like the bat signal over Gotham. I swear it was. And it was just this little moment, and Ferg feels like something special happened to him.
He's a believer.
Yeah. And wait till he hears about Zombie Gone. I think he's gonna be thrilled.
Yeah, that's an awesome thing. That's a fun. Yeah, that just sounds like fun to me. You know, it's something like that with school. It's good that he's getting into it and he's doing it. And he's a smart boy. And that's the future.
Well,
right?
we're trying to raise those grades, and there's a lot of room for raising.
He's smart no matter what his grades are. It doesn't matter. I mean, granted, it does matter for get your grades up, but yeah, he's a smart boy. He's sharp, and that's the thing. That's a beautiful thing. I mean, you know, like I could never hear. I would never expect to hear Ferg saying something. Cole keeps the light. I couldn't see. He couldn't say that. He knows better.
No, in his most frustrated moments, you know, angry at me or whatever, he would never do that. He would never, ever do that.
There's just certain things. There's certain roads you don't go down. Once you, you know, and that's the thing. I was watching a documentary on consciousness. They had somebody, Russell. I forget the guy's name. But he was basically, you know me. I'm watching lectures all the time. But, and he's sitting there talking about it, and somebody made a comment, and, I was reading the comments through, and the comment was basically, you know, it was very personal, you know, very, the guy was basically laying his heart out there and saying, you know, basically probably what a lot of people could relate to. You know, I know I related to it, and I know anyone else that's conscious would relate to it. And the one guy made a comment to him basically stating how, you know, some people, you know, have pulled the blindfold off. And, you know, you're trying to explain sunlight to people who have never pulled the blindfold off. So, you know, that's the only thing we can do is all we can do is talk about how good the sunlight is and how wonderful and how beautiful it is. And maybe, hopefully, these people, like Coburn, will start pulling off their goddamn blindfolds. And they're the only ones that can do it. You know, we could take them so far, but we can't. You lead a horse to water, you can't make them drink. So, you know, it's funny. There's another good documentary. I think, speaking of horses, about Buck, the guy who's the horse whisperer. That's a real good one, Bob. That's a real good one. It's, you know, that guy's talking about a lot more than horses. And if anyone hasn't seen it, you're sitting there, you're a little bored, watch Buck, the documentary section about, you know, on Netflix. And there's also a crazy scene. You know me, I'm born in New York and, you know, was raised up in New York. So horses make me nervous. But that's just because they're big hoofed animals and they're scary to me, in a sense. And my wife, my kids, they love them. But, you know, there's a scene in there, boy. I'll just tell you, anybody who's going to watch that movie, I definitely watch it, because the psychological things and all the other things that make you a better human being. There's no doubt about it. But there's a scene in there with a horse. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. I'm still get the willies over it. My goodness. If you haven't seen it, Bob, check it out. You got to check that out.
Is it just called Buck?
Buck, yeah. It's about the horse whisperer, the guy, you know, that Robert Redford made.
Yeah.
Movie with, yeah, it's about him. And, you know, he was an abused kid, and, you know, he was severely abused, and, you know, he came through it, and the guy came, he learned everything that he did, the right thing, in my opinion. You know, I always tell my kids, you know, the best kind of mistakes are other people's mistakes, because they're free. But if you pay for something, if you make a mistake and you pay for it, you better learn from it. You know, and he really did. He's an amazing human being. And I could never see a guy like that voting for Republican. That's just me. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can never see a guy like him.
No, you can kind of spot him.
Yeah, there's no way. The guy is just, you know, he's a good soul, you know. And
you know, it's like, yeah, you can't go to Europe, you can't go to Asia, and you can't go to Japan and get on a bullet train and come home and vote for a guy who wants to defund Amtrak.
Yeah.
It's physically impossible.
And it's so shameful. Man, in this country, you know, like the only reason the trains in France and Japan only hit at 300 miles an hour is because they don't have the room.
To slow down.
Oh, goodness gracious. Man, that's another thing. We should have the fastest. This is America. What are you so proud of that you're going to wear an American flag? You're proud that you're destroying mountains, destroying aquifers, poisoning people. That's the other thing, Bob. You know, like, that's the thing. You know, we're talking about that karmatic implications. Have you ever, I mean, when you make your kids scrambled eggs, do you do some shavings of magnesium in the eggs? Do you pour mercury in the eggs? Do you do that? Have you ever poisoned anyone, Bob? Think about this. In your life, have you ever willfully, for profit, poisoned someone? Took a woman's womb and made it toxic to life? Have you ever done anything that horrific? Can you, I mean, I would almost think being a straight up murderer is more compassionate than poisoning thousands.
Oh, you know, aren't poisoners further down in the bowels of Dante's Inferno than straight up murderers?
Well, they should.
I think they are.
Goodness, ugh. I mean, to profit, and then to not even play to clean it up. Oh my God! It's just, how do you sleep at night? How? How many? I mean, you would need 4 million thread count sheets to sleep at night to be that kind of despicable, disgusting, ridiculously regressive person that you would sit there and poison your country mate, your fellow citizens that you love your country so much. I don't even understand. How the hell do you even breathe?
And it comes back to that Vonnegut quote that's at the bottom of all my emails. it just does. The idea that a normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. See, if you took away the hum of those new tanning bed light bulbs, if you turned down the volume on the 115-inch flat panel LCD 240 megahertz flat screen, if you set it up so that the four-wheeler and the pick-em-up truck wouldn't start in the morning, and there was nothing left, all of that background noise was just gone away, well, then... Yeah, that guy is going to hear his conscience, and because he's going to be compelled to. I mean, you ever think there's a reason why there's so much yelling and singing going on in church? Because that's the last place in the world you want anybody, you know, like the religion industrial complex, the fundamentalists, and that's the last place you want them considering their conscience, because the preacher's up there in the pulpit screaming his fool head off at them, trying to separate them from what they earned that week.
Yes, sir. And, you know, if they just read the Bible, they'd know that the best way to pray is to do what? Right? What did Jesus say to do?
Yep, go into a closet and do it in silence.
Isn't that, and how, that's why, yeah, isn't that, that makes sense to me. I mean, you know, whatever, but that makes a lot of sense to me. That makes a lot more sense than, you know, of course, these hypocrites in high places and all these other, you know, oh, they're just, and that's exactly right. Why don't they read the book? I don't know, Bob. Why don't they read the book? You know,
they do, but they only read the dirty parts, Albert.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You know, and Jonathan loved David as his own soul. You know, and Lot said, "Here, take my daughters. You know, here, let me give you my virgin daughters to have." Or, and Noah's children said, "Let us get daddy liquored up that we may make babies by him." And all them little right-wingers, repressed as they are, sitting there reading that Bible with left hand and doing something entirely another with the right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Oh,
boy.
Yeah, but where's the fun in love thy neighbor? Oh, Jesus, can't we get to the part where Peter cuts somebody's ear off with a sword?
It's boring, hippie shit.
Let's go over to the Revelations where the monsters is a-wandering around. And them horsemen. I like him horsemen. It's better than a Stephen King novel. Jesus.
So speaking of that, have you been checking out this season's Dexter?
I haven't yet, but
okay? There's a heavy religious theme in it, and it's, from where it's going, it's interesting. It's interesting to see where they're doing. And Edward, yeah, definitely watch that one. Definitely. This season's a pretty good one. I think this season is a little better than the last season. You know, they're doing pretty good on that. And, you know, there's a lot of great TV out there. And, you know, I understand, you know, there's certain people that we need it. We need our reprieves. There's no doubt about it. You know, but it doesn't mean that the reprieve has to be mindless. You know, it could be good stuff. And,
exactly.
I don't think there's ever been a better time in history for that kind of stuff. So, you know, we might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah, now is the time. This is the moment. Right.
What else is there? It's the only time we have is right now. And, you know, that's what I mean. You know, people, we know where we need to go. We need to go to the future. The future, you know. I mean, sometimes...
I have no passion for buggy whips. I don't want to go back.
No, we don't. And it's like, you know, I mean, I only go back because the electric car used to be so prevalent back then. And, you know...
Well, I mean, you know, I mentioned Stephen King a minute ago. Have you seen the new novel that's out?
No.
Yeah, of all the things for him to tackle, and maybe it's because, you know, he's sort of getting older and thinking about stuff.
Mm.
His new novel out concerns a man who manages to time travel back to 1955 or whatever.
Okay.
And he decides that what he is going to do is stop the Kennedy assassination.
Mm.
Now, it sounds a hell of a lot like an old Twilight Zone episode to me. You remember the guy who was going to stop the ship from, or whatever, trying to stop the ship from being torpedoed by the U-boat? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the reviews I'm reading say that Stephen King has handled it in his own way, and that it's actually worth the read. But apparently what the guy runs up against is, no matter how good your intentions, even if you can go back into the past, it's still the past, even when you're there. So why would anybody want to go back to it, Albert? You know,
exactly.
You know, they want to go. The right wingers want to go back to this leave it to Beaver World, but they forget about the lunch counters and the whites only water fountains. Either they forget it or they actually still want it, and that's the only two possibilities.
Mm-hmm. And they forget about that 90% tax rate on anyone who made anything over $2 million.
Bingo.
And if I just may, you know, we're still talking about building the future. And to me, there's no, you know, in terms of building the future, if I may just read this quote, if I may. When wireless is perfectly applied, the whole Earth will be converted into a huge brain, which in fact it is, all things being particles of a real and rhythmic whole. We shall be able to communicate with one another instantly, irrespective of distance. Not only this, but through television and telephony, we shall see and hear one another as perfectly as though we were face to face, despite intervening distances of thousands of miles. And the instruments through which we shall be able to do this will be amazingly simple compared to our present telephone. A man will be able to carry one in his best pocket. And that is by Nikola Tesla in 1926.
Gee, Minnie, I had a feeling it was Tesla.
I mean... That is the future. As SpongeBob in the SpongeBob episode, when they get the time machine in the thing, and the Squidward's future. But that's what the future is. That's the future. That's right now. That's Nikola. 1926, he's talking about friggin' iPhones.
Yep.
That's crazy. That gives me chills. And so imagine to where, if we just turned up the vision a little bit, just turned it up, open the mind a little bit, the potential for humanity is endless.
And see, I think people in other countries are having that vision.
Yes, sir.
They've got the vision turned up, opened up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But here in America, Albert,
yeah,
we're thinking about how to squeeze another penny out of a quarter pounder.
Yeah, or chew another pound of flesh out of the guy in front of us's back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because a generation's worth of pig licking can't do, coupled with, and this is the thing that just beats the pants off of me, it's a patriotism of not being able to do things.
Yeah.
And a generation of that has turned us into a country that takes down its streetlights. Jesus Christ, Albert, we are a country that takes down
it's streetlights. You know, I had one of those little moments with Ferg coming home the other night in the dark, and I just said, imagine this for a minute, Ferg, you know, because we're on a dark country road. It's winding. It's dark. I said, you take for granted what you see out the front windshield of this automobile. Because you can see the deer illuminated off to the side because the breadth of the light beams is enough to illuminate the side of the roads as well as the road itself. You can see feet. You can see yards into the forest. I said, do you realize, Ferg, that you are seeing the nighttime world in a way that Isaac Newton never saw it, in a way that Thomas Jefferson never saw it, that no human being up until roughly the 20th century ever saw it? We know what the night looks like, and we take it, and we take it for granted.
Yes, sir.
And all of a sudden, you know, the eyes got a little bit wider, the mouth closed, the jawline set. And he said, no, Dad, that's amazing.
Yeah, we need perspective on the objective. You know, we need perspective on these things. You know, we have our subjective, and sometimes people get too wrapped up in that thing, but we need, you know, to be able to identify the objective here, to see where we're at, to see where we're going. I mean, it's, yeah, and I know Ferg can see it. And I know, like, you know, not a lot of, what is he, 15 now?
Yeah.
You know, when I was 15, that wasn't even in the radar.
He's a little over a month away from 16.
Thanks. Goodness gracious. But, you know, Bob, I mean, you know.
Got to teach a little of that vision thing. That's what George H.W. Bush called it. Yeah, I don't do the vision thing. I mean, should that just become the Republican Party motto, Albert? We don't do the vision thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they're trying to elect, what's that guy's name from, not the, the worst, Escape from L.A. What was that president?
Snake?
Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
No, the president.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes people should watch these things and check out just, that's what I love about science fiction, is it's so nuanced. You know, and yeah, all right, the movie's kind of corny, all right, yeah, he's surfing on a tsunami, all right, whatever, you know. But
yeah, and, you know, these guys, well, it's supposedly going to be turned into a movie, but you've heard me talking, perhaps with Reverbo, about it. You got to get down with Richard K. Morgan.
Okay.
I read his three books that are set in, like, the 1,000 years from now future.
Yes.
And they were damned enjoyable, especially the first one, Altered Carbon, that Reverbo's been talking about for years now. I finally got around. It's magnificent.
Okay.
But the two that got me the most were the one that was set 50 years in the future and the one that was set 100 years in the future. And they are called Market Forces, and the other one in the U.S. is called 13, because I guess Amazon didn't figure it could sell a book called Black Man, because that's its real title.
Okay.
But and they're dark, and they are not optimistic, and they make Blade Runner look like Disneyland. But the thing is, it is a verifiable future. It's what the future would look like if we were watching it as we swirl down the toilet.
Yeah. If we continue to have no action on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt. Mm-hmm.
So, we'll just add that to the list for the Little Horn Book Club. Albert, this has been, you and I haven't done this in a long, long time, but this has been absolutely magnificent.
It certainly has. All right. I love it, Bob. Love it.
All right.
Brother Bob.
Take care, brother.
Take care. Always.
Bye now.
You good. Bye-bye.
Brother Albert, calling from Southwest Wisconsin. Every now and then, I just kind of need one of those all-over-the-place conversations, and I appreciate it. To be honest with you, I needed it badly this evening, and the universe provides. It's pretty much time to get out of here. A reminder, we will have the PRISM West Virginia American History Chat Series featuring Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So showtime will not be normal start. Then the rest of the week is as normal as is possible for us to get it around here. Thank you very, very much for the contribution that came in. I've already sent out an email. Thank you.
It is much appreciated. It's the first we've seen in several days. And badly needed, I might add. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab, contribute. And so is the snail mail address if you'd prefer, if you'd like to help out, if you're able to help out. Goodness me, what a wide range of topics we covered this evening. And lots of Moran's, too, for Moran Monday. I hope you'll be there tomorrow to listen in on Dr. Bill and get some real history as opposed to, you know, Bill O'Reilly history. And be back with us on Wednesday. Thanks go out, as ever, to everybody who makes all of this go. First and foremost, you, for your ideas and your support, your kind gifts that keep all of this going. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Reverbo, who has been mentioned a couple of times, is always there in the background with ideas and the occasional op-ed column for headonradionetwork.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. And, of course, John Fox is our webmaster, web designer, and chief engineer. I sincerely appreciate everything he does in the way of keeping me sane. All of these streams come to you via WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben Birch literally saved liberal progressive talk on the Internet beginning in 2002. It is an amazing story of his. Someday we're just going to have to do an hour or two with Ben just to let you know what it has been like and what goes in to maintaining the White Rose Society. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there to learn about the Coal River Wind Project, as well as to become a member. No matter where you are, become a member of Coal River Mountain Watch and thereby become a part of the solution for Appalachia's future. You heard a lot about the future this evening. We're working on it here. I was mighty proud to be together with a lot of my friends and colleagues from Cold River Mountain Watch yesterday in Charleston. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on The Horn.